Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We'll fight to the death. We are soldiers. We are soldiers.
Hello, folks, and thank you once again for coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And next week here on Bard's Logic Political Talk, we will have the founder of the Patriot Journalist Network, Mark Prysik, on the show to tell us about the Twitter team. And we will tell about some of the effects that this group, which I am a part of, had some effects in the Bashir case, or scandal, I should say, that was recently in the news. And that brings us to our show tonight, is what is important to conservatives today, not only in issues, but as topics. One of those topics is how conservative women are treated differently than liberal women in the media. And almost no greater example is the comments from Bashir from MSNBC. And now we do have an audio clip of what he said about Sarah Palin. Now, of course, he did apologize, and it was a mute apology. And then, of course, as you may know, that he has resigned his position there today. And part of that may be because of this past week from the Patriot Journalist Network, part of the Twitter team, as they were out and very active on Facebook, putting out information and putting on pressure to MSNBC. Now, while MSNBC did not officially, through my understanding, put anything out to force him to leave, I believe that there probably was some pressure to bear for him to personally resign himself. So I think that, played a part. What happened on Twitter from the Patriot Journalist Network in part did play a role in that pressure to be brought to bear for him to resign. And what I'll do now, and we do have our panelist Cindy Todd on, who is quote going to be quote tonight. And oh, there she went. Did see her, but she'll be back. I see her on the switchboard here. But, of course, as always, callers and chat participation are welcome, and you are welcome whether you are listening live now to the show or if you are listening to this on the archive. Come join the host and the panelists tonight. As I said, we have Cindy Todd, and we do have many guests, and perhaps I'll read a list later of the guests who have come onto the show if you are new to the show, or even if you are a regular listener, may not know who all the guests are that we've had on the show. However, there is a list that you can get on the Bard's Logic Political Talk group that is on Facebook. And, of course, there is the Bard's Logic Political Talk page on Facebook as well. And, of course, as we do every night here on the show, is all mics do stay open. So come and be a part of our roundtable discussion. Tonight, Bard's Logic discusses what is important to conservatives today, and we will use social media to determine what is on conservative minds. And here's a quote from Cindy Thomas: "There's plenty out there. Obama has enough crap on his own." So pull in what's on your mind, or if you're listening to this on the archive, you can send a message on the Bard's Logic Political Talk page on Facebook, or you can contact me by going to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. Check it out. We also have some wonderful organizations. It is the Christmas season, so it'll be a great time to look at some of those charities we have on there, and I'll be putting on a couple more, which aren't particularly charities, but it are will be to advance the conservative cause. And mentioning that it is the Christmas season, indeed it is. However, there are still many important issues going on today that are important to pay attention to. And while this is something in the news, this is part of an issue, as I meant earlier, and that's how conservative women are treated differently than liberal women from the media. And so I will play for you, and of course there's even more important issues, of course, that affects everyone in the nation, and we'll probably touch on some of those tonight. We'll also have discussion about things I've seen, such as the minimum wage debate. Of course, there's still a lot of people out there who are discussing Benghazi. So we'll touch on that as well. And so I see the folks who have chimed in on the chat and actually signed in, and welcome Cindy and welcome Tessa. It's great to have you guys here at the show. A couple of our regulars here, which we really appreciate. Our regulars here at Bard's Logic Political Talk, and for those of you who are regulars or new, you could share the archive with folks so that they can come and join us as well. And so I will play the audio clip, so give me a moment to get things set up and listen to Bashir.
The most comprehensive first-person accounts of slavery comes from the personal diary of a man called Thomas Thistlewood, who kept copious notes for 39 years. In 1756, he records that a slave named Darby catched eating canes, had him well flogged and pickled, then made Hector, another slave, S-H-I-T, in his mouth. This became known as Darby's Dose, a punishment invented by Thistlewood that spoke only of the slave owner's savagery and inhumanity. When Mrs. Palin invokes slavery, she doesn't just prove her rank ignorance. She confirms that if anyone truly qualified for a dose of discipline from Thomas Thistlewood, then she would be the outstanding candidate.
So, of course, folks, we know what he is referring to should happen to Sarah Palin. Now, we do have an article here, and then I will open up the mic and get comments from our panelist, Cindy. But first, we have an article here from Newsbusters. It says, 19 days after suggesting that someone should defecate in Sarah Palin's mouth, MSNBC's Martin Bashir resigned from the network, according to Mediate. In a statement reprinted on the website Wednesday, the liberal host announced, upon further reflection and after meeting with the president of MSNBC, I have tendered my resignation. It is my sincere hope that all of my colleagues at this special network will be allowed to focus on the issues that are a matter without the distractions of myself or my ill-judged comments. And, yes, he did speak with the president of MSNBC, who, it is my belief, was at least some way swayed by some of the actions taken by the Patriot Journalist Network and what they event were going on Twitter last night, or Monday night, rather. And so it's definitely something to check out there on Patriot Journalist Network, and, of course, at www.patriotjournalist.com. And we will hear from the founder of that next week. And so to the article, says he added, I deeply regret what was said, will endeavor to work hard in making constructive contributions in the future, and will always have a deep appreciation for our viewers. Bashir's despicable comments were first reported by Newsbusters when, let's be honest, this isn't my favorite guy, Rush Limbaugh, especially after the way he conducted himself during the presidential primaries in 2012. That's for another day. Made a joke about Sandra Fluke. ABC, CBS, and NBC slammed the radio host. These same networks have thus far ignored Beshear's reprehensible remarks, according to a study by the Media Research. The cable host apologized on November 18th. The website TV Newsers had a statement from MSNBC President Phil Griffin. Beshear resigned today, effective immediately. I understand the decision that I thank him for 3 great years with MSNBC. Martin is a good man and respected colleague. I wish him all the best. Beshear has resigned. Will the network finally cover his outrageous attack? A transcript of Beshear's original November 15th comments. I give a link below. And at this point, we will bring in our panelist, the female on our panelist, who I'm sure has something to say about this issue. Go ahead, Cindy. Thank you very much for coming to the show.
Well, I'm one of those crazy, well, I'm glad to be here, Robert. Thank you. And I'm one of those crazy conservative women that really should probably shut up and keep her mouth shut because the liberals just can't stand me. We're the ones that they want to stay in the kitchen barefoot and pregnant. You know, Sarah Palin needs to stay in her kitchen barefoot and pregnant and let the Nancy Pelosi's and the others go out and do their duty for the men in this country so that they can lick their feet and do whatever they want us to do. But I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to be that. and I'm going to just say, this guy, it'll be interesting to see where he shows up next.
Yeah, I was thinking that today, actually.
Yeah, these people don't just go away. They shuffle themselves around to different jobs so that they can stay in the liberal, they can stay in the I don't know, the fray of things. You know, they've got to keep working because they are so liberal that they are very important to the liberal cause. And so they're not going to get rid of anybody important to their cause. They're just going to put him somewhere else, just like they put all the liberal people that lose their jobs, they just put them in a different place. Sebelius may lose her job, but she'll end up in a better place. You know, you just never know where they're going to go next. So it'll be interesting to see where he shows up. And I beg to differ with him. I think that Sarah Palin is a patriotic person who is near and dear to my heart because of how she continues on and she stays in the fight despite how they have maligned her and castigated her. And, I mean, I'll tell you what, you talk about tough. She is a barracuda.
You know, I wouldn't mind seeing her actually run for president. I don't know if she would be open for that just because the way she's treated, not only inside of or outside of her party, but also by those inside her party. And I also read her book she wrote shortly afterwards, and even the way she was treated by the people in her very, well, not just, it was hers in McCain's campaign.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The thing is, they just maligned her for the smallest, littlest things. They would take the smallest, littlest comments, blow them out of proportion, put them around to work their wonderful, marvelous way, and make her sound like she was a complete idiot. But I'm sorry, Sarah Palin is not an idiot. Now, I'll tell you who is an idiot. The one that they keep saying is so smart. Obama, he's an idiot. I used to think that all of what was going on was his plans and he's getting everything done the way he wants it. That may be true to a certain extent. He is getting some of what he wanted, his pet peeves, his pet issues. He's getting them done. But basically, he's under somebody else's thumb. whether it's Soros or, you know, Koch brothers or whoever, I don't know. But the rich people at the top, the Illuminati types, they're the ones that are directing him. And it's obvious that he's not really all that brilliant because when you see him speak off the teleprompter, he can't put two sentences together with, you know, decent vocabulary or anything. He just, he's always saying the same stuff over and over. A bunch of this, a bunch of that, a whole lot of this and a whole lot of that. He has no vocabulary. And once he gets off the teleprompter, he's liable to say things that they don't really like either. And so I think they keep him on the teleprompter for a reason. I don't know about you, I don't know about anybody else, but the way he whistles his S's just drives me crazy. It's like fingernails going up my back. I mean up the chalkboard up my back, you know?
Yeah, I was gonna say.
But anyway, the guy needs to go away, but he won't. He'll be back somewhere.
Well, certainly, and they all do. You know, maybe he'll be a part of some kind of Jerry Springer-like show. I don't know.
Probably.
Jerry Springer was actually a local guy here. Could you actually believe he was actually the mayor of Cincinnati at one point?
Whoa. Wow.
Yeah, it tells you,
well,
you know.
Yeah, he'll be somewhere spitting out his own vitriol. You know, he'll be out there.
Right. And I just find it interesting. We were, I was talking to Mark Prasek, you know, from the Patriot Journalist. And, you know, just, you know, this morning, and, you know, there was, you know, some things we were actually working on to, you know, bring some more pressure to bear for MSNBC to do something. And of course, they didn't take it upon themselves to do it, but not publicly. They didn't, you know, denounce them or anything. I mean, you read the article, you know, what you heard the article, and perhaps they'll say something that he's gone, but I seriously doubt it, that they'll do that. But, you know, it seems like, you know, that didn't come to pass because he took it upon himself to, you know, well, I'm sure he fell on the sword so that later on, you know, once things calm down, you know, he can come back, maybe not on MSNBC at some point, but somewhere, as you said. But, you know, I talked about, you know, women, you know, conservative sides. Look at the flip side. I was watching, or I tried to watch, my recording wasn't that great, so I had to try to re-record Crossfires because I've been paying attention to, you know, more to those since Newt Gingrich has been on. But they had Debbie Wasserman Schultz on there, you know, the head of the DNC, and she was having a debate with not my favorite Republican, Reince Priebus. I used to, endearing call him, you know, Reince Pubis. But God, I can't stand that guy. But, you know, if anyone who watched Crossfire, and if they have not, I suggest, you know, watching it or also going, you know, watching it online. You know, there's a link online where people. But, I mean, the whole time you'll notice is, I mean, she's just talking over, as I said, not to try to defend, you know, Reince Priebus too much. But she just kept talking over him. I mean, giving no respect, you know, to him, just, you know, trying to over-talk him. And so was the female host of Crossfire. I can't remember what her name is. Is that a show that you watch as well, Cindy?
You know, I haven't watched a single one of them since he's been on there. But I guess it's because I'm always doing something at that time. I'm not even in front of the TV at that point. So
yeah.
I
record them and then watch them late at night.
Well, now I have gotten on and listened to him. You know, parts of what he said when people put it out on YouTube and stuff, you know. I have
mm-hmm.
gone and seen some of that. But I haven't, you know, sat down and watched the show. I tell you, I did sit and watch part of it one time on TV, and it
mm-hmm.
was when Van Jones was on there, and Van Jones was doing the same thing to him, just talking over him and not letting him speak what, you know, say the whole thing of what he has
mm-hmm.
a whole idea. He couldn't get out a whole idea because they're all jumping on top of him. And I'm not sure if it's going to be a good idea for him to be on that show. if they're going to continue to allow those guys to trample over his words. I mean, yeah, they're looking like idiots to us, but I guess the liberals out there that are listening to the show, Van Jones is their hero, so they're happy with him stepping all over Newt. And they don't get to hear Newt's viewpoint, which is what they really need to hear, you know.
Right, certainly.
They need to hear what Newt has to say.
And we're definitely going to, you know, talk more about Newt tonight, especially in regards to, for all of our Newt fans out there, whether you're listening live or now on the archive, I do have an announcement that I'm going to be making for the Newt fans out there for the show. So we'll talk about that later. But I do see some folks in the chat and some also who are also on the switchboard. If you are in the chat, you're not signed in. You could sign in through, I believe, Facebook is one way. But if not, you want to stay anonymous, that's fine. But you are welcome to call in and tell us what is on your mind, because this is a show tonight about what is on the conservatives' minds today. And you can call in at 347-945-7428. Again, that's 347-945-7428. And if you'd like to chime in, just hit the 1 on your number dial, and that will let me know that you'd like to come in. Or, of course, you can send me a message via Facebook as well. So another topic that, you know, I found that they were talking a lot about, we'll move over this, is now there's a discussion about the raising of minimum wage. And the reason why that discussion and that issue is coming up again is because I believe today, or a couple of days ago, President Obama had a speech about the wage gap here in America, the wealth gap here in America, and how we got to close the wealth gap. And of course, the first thing they want to do, thing they want to do is to, they're always talking about raising minimum wage. That's something I've never been a supporter of. I mean, when they raise minimum wage, I remember when I was an hourly wage earner, and there was hourly, and when they would raise the minimum wage, I never got a raise when they did that. Did you, Cindy? Did you ever get,
no.
If you were on an hourly wage and they raised the minimum wage, did you get a raise to compensate for that?
No. Oh, wait. Oh, I thought I was on mute. Okay. No, I didn't, but I was already being paid. I was a decorator. I was already being paid more than that per hour anyway. I was on commission anyway. Oops. I was on commission anyway. Or at least most of it was commission. So
mm-hmm.
It didn't really affect me, but who it affects is people who actually lose their jobs. See, the economy's not bad enough yet, I guess. We haven't lost enough jobs yet over Obamacare. We haven't lost enough jobs over illegal immigrants being here taking our jobs. So they got to invent another way to cut off some more jobs. We're gonna raise the minimum wage, so we're gonna shut down a few more jobs. I guess that's their strategy. You got to have
Certainly, but one of the things that the Democrats always talk about is fairness. And if it's going to be fair, how is it fair for those who are either on minimum wage or are going to come into minimum wage to get a raise in pay, and for those of us who are not working, or not at minimum wage who are working, our income doesn't increase? And the reason I say that is because, do you think that the industries, the businesses that have mostly minimum wage workers, that once they raise minimum wage, they're like, oh, I guess I'm going to have to swallow that. I guess I'm just not going to get as much profit as I'm used to. But no, they're going to raise the prices on everything, and that's going to affect all of us. So in essence, what they're doing is by raising the minimum wage, and the businesses are going to raise their prices, they're actually lowering the value of what those who are not making a minimum wage are earning. In essence, that's what they're doing. By raising their minimum wage up, they're lowering the value of our wage, because now things are going to, you know, certain things, not everything, but a lot of things are going to become more expensive because the businesses are going to offset that extra cost by two ways: one, raising their prices that they get or that they keep their staff, or with what you're alluding to, and that is they'll just cut their staff. And they'll make their employees, you know, work more for the less amount of employees. They'll just give them more responsibility. Which in essence, giving more responsibility isn't a bad thing. But, you know, the people who are going to be losing the jobs, you know, is another. So there's only two ways to do that. So I don't see where minimum wage is a good thing, you know, for the middle class, and I certainly don't see, and I think you were getting to this point, and if I interrupted, sorry, we'll get to that, what about the teenagers? I mean, if you got minimum wage at $10, $12 an hour, you know, how many companies are going to hire teenagers at $10, $12 an hour? They're going to want a more skilled labor force, and teenagers just don't have that skill or ability or experience.
Well, and this is a really bad time for jobs right now, and so mm-hmm. they're going to give the jobs to somebody who just recently lost their job and really needs a good paying job in order to take care of their family, too. And, mm-hmm. Of course, they've had more experience. They've been in the job market, and they have been successful at keeping a job until the economy, you know, went bad. But, yeah, it'll be tough for young people. And here's the thing, it'll be particularly tough for young black. They're the ones that are not in school anywhere. A job at McDonald's or Burger King or Wendy's or the Waffle House or wherever, you know, that job won't be open to them. And they really need it. It's not like it's just a job to help them get through school or whatever. That's their only income, and they're all trying to survive without living with their parents, you know.
Right, that's also an education problem too. Go ahead.
Well, there's no doubt that a lot of young people have asked for the problems they've given themselves because they did not apply themselves in high school. They were happier to skip school and go to the mall and hang out, or go somewhere and get stoned, or whatever. And even when they did go to school, they came home and didn't do their homework, and just sort of, you know, passed the tests where they could, and maybe they dropped out when they were 16 or 17, and they gave up trying to get themselves an education. Once you get behind, I've seen that happen with Mexicans here in our county. We have a lot of Mexicans here. And I've seen them, once they get to a certain grade and they're so far behind, the teachers just start passing them for no reason, just to get them out of their class.
Yeah, that happens all over the place when they just pass the buck, yeah.
They don't bother to remediate them. They just send them on down the line, and they're expecting them to, around here, they're expecting them to quit when they're 16, when they're old enough to legally, and go work in the ferneries. Now, if that doesn't sound like putting people back on the plantation, I don't know what does. So, and if they don't go to work in the fernery, then they're going to be on our bill, and we'll be paying their welfare checks and their food stamp checks. And because they'll have kids, even if they can't afford them, we'll also be paying their child tax credit bill, and that's where we're going to be headed. And eventually all that money will run out, and the government will have everyone on its payroll. Because there will be no real jobs out there. The government will own all the big companies, or at least control all the big companies. I mean, it's so obvious what they're trying to do, and yet people are, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. You can't come up with a story like that. You're equating us with communists, with Stalin. You know, that's just ridiculous. And yet, that's exactly what they want to do. Right now, all the money in China is being made by a certain few elite, high up.
Okay, real quick, Cindy. We do have someone I see who wants to chime in. I do see it there, 704. I will be opening up your mic shortly. And so go ahead, Cindy. We'll finish your thoughts, and then we'll open up 704's mic. Go ahead.
Well, I was getting off topic anyway. I think we should get back to our subject at hand.
there we go. We'll go going off on a tangent, or as I say sometimes in the show, I digress. So without further ado, we'll go ahead to 704, bring you in. And if you just tell us your name and where you are hailing from, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. How are you? Thank you for coming to the show.
Hey, it's Chuck Suter, constitutionalwar.org, and I was calling in to see how you guys were doing, and I like some of the points that Cindy was making there. I would just add that although we've got problems with entitlements and all these things, and there is a serious threat there with that, it's not going to do anything if we get rid of every single entitlement that's going to the Obama phone lady and the, you know, food stamps or whatever they call it nowadays. It's not going to do a single thing to help stop what's going on in this country. Ron Paul has a great article out today about the Fed in collusion with Wall Street on a $200 trillion. $200 trillion. Think about that number. I mean, we were blown away when we found out through a partial audit that there was, an additional $8 trillion. You know, our debt went from pretty much, I think around $6, $7 trillion, something like that, jumped up to $14, $15 trillion overnight when we found out about that audit.
Wow.
You're looking at $200 trillion in what the Fed is doing with printing money and all that. And I think as conservatives, I think we will, although we need to address the entitlements, it's going to take time. You can't just take this stuff away from people. The economy is screwed, not because of these people on food stamps. It's because of the government and the housing industry and the bailouts and TARP and these companies that should have filled and been liquidated and sold out to people like Mitt Romney's company, which I was not a Romney supporter, but they should have been sold out to Mitt Romney's company, and they should have stripped them down to the bolts and used whatever they could use, what was left of them. And it's the government's fault that there's not jobs out there. There's a lot of lazy people, but let's not forget who's the culprit of the disaster that our economy is.
Well, no, and I agree with you, Chuck. And certainly, you know, we're not saying here that it's, you know, the biggest problem. It is part of it, and it's a part of, I would call the work malaise that's starting to grow in this country, because I think the government is making it too easy for people, to not work. I mean, you can't even maintain, and I've seen it just here in my town, where people can maintain a decent, it's not a standard of living I would want to have, but they can actually have a decent standard of living where I've seen in some instances they've eaten better than I do, and be on government assistance. I mean, they truly, I know people who, are on welfare and I know, I believe in a hand up, not a handout, welfare and disability, who I know could work. That's not saying all of them are bad. I don't want to make it look like I'm saying that. But they're able to do it. So, what I'm saying is that they can live actually pretty, not a standard of living I'd like to live, but, I mean, they actually have homes, like houses that they, like, rent or buy, you know, while they're on this government assistance, and which, you know, which I kind of find baffling. But
I agree 100%. The real crux of the issue that I think is, even though we would be standing on principle and saying, yes, this got to go, this got to go, that got to go, and I'm not trying to be a bleeding heart. What I'm saying is, good luck winning an election when just about 50% of the people are
certainly.
This government assistance.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to have a message to say, hey, look, the very last thing that we're going to cut is your food stamps. We need to go after this corporate cronyism, these handouts, these bailouts to companies, and then we'll start addressing the other things as the economy. You know, look what Reagan did. The economy, you know, they told Reagan, it's gonna hurt at first, but then it's just going to soar. And that's what we've got to go through. Let's go through a little bit of the pain. We can't take away the food stamps right away, but then when it starts soaring, then that's when we come back to them and say, look, all right, now we're going to start scaling this stuff back.
Mm-hmm. Right, because the economy's better and people need it as much as they need it now, certainly. Right, and I do see that. I mean, and that makes, you know, a lot of sense, especially. And it's not the biggest, you know, it's not the biggest issue. That's why we want, you know, other folks, you know, call in. But that is an issue that, you know, I've been seeing, you know, people talking about, you know, today in the news and on Facebook, Twitter, things of that nature. With the talk about what we talked about earlier, Chuck, do you want to address this? Is there's the discussion of raising the minimum wage. What's your thoughts on that?
Why not raise it to $50 an hour? I mean, you know, it's horrible. There should be absolutely no minimum wage whatsoever. If I want to pay, I run my own construction company, if you remember. And if some kid in the eighth grade wants to come out and work for me at $3 an hour and just pretty much stand around and talk to me and hand me a tool here or there, and he can come out and, you know, get me, run to the store and get me a soda if he can walk down the street or ride his bike. And I'm not going to be able to pay that kid anything. But if I can give that kid $3 an hour and hire him over the summer, well, when I was that kid, I did that. And that's what I did, you know. So you're taking money out of his hands. You're taking money out of people's hands with the minimum wage. And here's my favorite point on the minimum wage. In 1964 was the last year that the U.S. Mint produced silver quarters, and the minimum wage in 1964 was $1.25. Was five silver quarters. Those five silver quarters today are worth about $24 to $25, something like that. So that minimum wage would be, that's how much you would be getting through the minimum wage. Well, for with just $1.25, you take it to $7. I mean, goodness, the math is escaping me right now, but it's almost like $100 or something like that per hour for minimum wage. The minimum wage was huge. It's not the minimum wage that needs to be raised. We've got to quit printing this money and devaluing the currency. It's an inflation tax, and nobody wants to address it.
It's all about redistributing wealth, and the problem is they're not redistributing wealth downward. They're redistributing it from the middle up, not and here's the
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, well, there's certainly more money going up than down, that's for certain.
Yeah.
No, I'll agree with that. Yeah, corporate welfare is ridiculous.
The only reason there's some of our money going down right now is because of what Chuck said earlier, that you've got to buy the votes first. You have to get enough people on welfare, enough people counting on that check, that they're going to vote for that check every election.
Certainly.
Okay,
they're
so
building a constituents of dependency.
Exactly. So, and once they have that, and once they have the Republican Party completely devoid of any conservatives, and they just meld the two parties into one, which is about where they are now. There's a few people in there trying to keep it from happening, but basically when they get that done and they get the entire delegation of conservatives out of there, that at least in numbers where they can have a say-so, once that's done, the distributing of the wealth downward will stop. And those people and us, after they have finished emptying the middle-class coffers and sending the money up, then we're all going to be just like it was in the Feifel days, where you have the elite, the dukes, the duchesses, the lords, the king, the princes, and the barons and the baronesses.
Mm-hmm.
All of those guys, they'll have all the power and all the land and all the companies, and then the rest of us will be their worker bees. And what's sad about that is that we spent so many lives, blood, sweat, tears, lives, years and years getting to the point where we had freedom and liberty, and the average guy could actually raise his standard. He could raise his standard of living from one generation to the next. And now all of that is going to be crushed. All of that is going to be shattered. And we're going to go back to the Feifel days. The only thing that would keep this from happening is if we go back to the radicalism of the revolution, of the American Revolution period, where from 1750 to the late 1770s, the attitudes of even the people in the aristocracy changed. See, now they were with us because we're over here on the other side of the ocean away from King George. And King George was starting to dip his hand into their pockets. I think he got a little jealous because they were starting to be so prosperous here. And so I think he started dipping into their coffers saying, oh, yeah, here's a source of money for me to fight my wars and to do everything else I want to do. And when that happened, it made the aristocracy in America one of us, one of the middle class. In other words, they put us on the same team. And what's going to happen, what has to happen now, since there's no one to steal from the aristocracy right now, they're doing all the stealing, it's going to have to be that enough of us get that same radicalism back to where just by our sheer numbers we can take back control. And the only way to do that is to convince those people that are receiving those checks for doing nothing that that's a bad idea and that they're not just going to lift themselves up. They're going to bring us down, and we're all going to be on the same level very soon. Now, if you were to ask someone, hey, Chuck, what would you rather have? Would you rather be poor with everybody else being poor, or would you rather make a pretty decent living and let other people make even better living than you? What would you prefer, Chuck?
Well, that's basically what I have right now is making a decent living, and I've got a nice truck. We only have one vehicle. You know, we've got five kids, but I've got a nice house, two-car garage, all that. But the, you know, if it wasn't for, look, I don't mind going into lower middle class neighborhoods and doing work. But whenever I've got a choice between doing that and going and working for some rich folks downtown, you bet your bottom dollar that's where I'm going to go work, because that's how I pay the bill. That's why I'm able to provide for my family. And it is the, you know, rising tides raises all ships mentality. It's really well set in the Republican Party. You look at who came up with the idea of, or who criticized Reagan for voodoo economics? That was George H.W. Bush who said
right.
Reagan's economic plan. It wasn't the liberals. It was George H.W. Bush. Then we ended up electing him. Then we elected his son, and his son tripled the size of the government. And there's no way that there would be Common Core without No Child Left Behind. There's no way that we would have the bailouts without TARP. There's no way Obama could exist without Bush. And it's just a sad, unfortunate pattern.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like the Republicans will be pushing Christie to do the same thing. And
oh, my gosh. Yeah, we've talked about that, yeah.
Yeah,
we've
had that subject on here.
If Christie gets nominated, then it's going to be Hillary Clinton for at least 4 years. Because I think Hillary Clinton will be the nominee for the Democrat Party. Her or Debbie Wasserman Schultz. But also talk about, you know, a lot of spending. I mean, we're spending $50 million, have a $50 million program over in Afghanistan to train members of their youth, you know, the 25 and unders. So, I mean, we spent $100 billion in Afghanistan on its reconstruction of another country. Now, of course, you know, their thought is well, if we, you know, reconstruct their country and we, you know, pay to, you know, educate their civilians, then they'll be less likely to join the insurgency and less likely to join the, you know, the bands that would want to attack America and, of course, you know, Americans over there, and then, of course, later on come over here to attack us. You know, we'll see how that logic pans out, but I mean, that's, you know, $100 billion that could have been spent at home. I don't know. What do you think about that, Chuck and, Cindy? I mean, $100 billion. I mean, is that money wisely spent? You know, because, I mean, do you really think that that's going to keep these folks over there from, becoming insurgents against us?
Absolutely not. I mean, you're going to end up, you know, with the same situation you have here. It's trying to make the Afghanistan people, Afghanis, dependent on Washington, D.C., just
yeah.
like we've done to our own people and we've done to Germany, and South Korea can't have, you know, they can't defend themselves. And Japan, hey, don't you defend yourselves. Look, Japan, when we fought a war against Japan, they believed their emperor was God. That mentality does not exist in Japan anymore. They are far past that. Let's allow them to defend themselves. Let you know, and I'm not for withdrawing everything from all over the world. You know, Ron Paul got accused of that. I don't think that's really where he stood, but whether it is or not, that's not where I stand. It's to be able to be anywhere in the blink of an eye, but not be everywhere all of the time for no reason. And the spending that you talk about in these countries, whether it's Afghanistan, building an embassy as large as the Vatican and Iraq, rebuilding Egypt and all this stuff. Look, one of the biggest things is we talk about we can't cut our aid to Israel. Well, I agree with that. We can't cut it as long as we're funding all of Israel's enemies to the tune of five times what we're funding Israel. Yeah, we can't cut our aid to Israel. We cut our aid to all these countries
there
that hate Israel.
We're making them strong, and they're fighting against our allies.
Absolutely.
You're exactly right.
And nobody wants to touch the issue of Saudi Arabia. Everyone says, oh, Saudi Arabia is bad, this, that, and the other. Israel and Saudi Arabia do have... And, I mean, I don't think Israel really has a choice because we fund everybody around them to have this kind of dirty or, you know, I don't know what you want to call it dirty, but, you know, sleeping with the enemy type of relationship with Saudi Arabia. But we're trying to bring democracy to Egypt and to all these other countries. And meanwhile, we are just best buddies with Saudi Arabia. It makes no sense until you realize the power players that are making
mm-hmm.
the money off of these decisions. And
it comes down to four letters, OPEC.
Yeah, well, that's what, you know, and And the fact of the matter is we've got all the energy that we could ever possibly want right here in this country, and you're not allowed to go after it unless you go 20 miles offshore or whatever it is, because who wants those regulations? You know, as conservatives, we've got to admit that there's a lot of these corporations that do everything they can to shut down the little guy. I'm from West Virginia originally. The reason that this country hates coal and the reason the Republicans don't stand up for it, even though they say they do not stand up for coal. The reason they don't stand up for coal is because those of us on this show right now could get our money together. We could go get some land out in the hills of West Virginia, hire some folks at minimum wage or whatever you want to pay them to start swinging some axes and some shovels, go down in the ground, pull that coal up out of there and sell it, and we could be millionaires in 10 years. But they try everything they can to keep you from doing that. That's why they hate coal, because anybody can make a fortune off of it.
That's
they want a monopoly. They want monopolies, just like the health insurance company wants. Health industry and the insurance industry wants monopolies to where, you know, guy running for Senate here in North Carolina, Dr. Greg Brannon. He's a constitutional scholar. You guys should check him out, GregBrannon.com. And he makes in his going around.
Can you spell that last name?
Brannon. It's B-R-A-N-N-O-N. Brannon. Greg Brannon. And he makes the point that, look, if him and a couple of his doctor buddies want to go and start a hospital because they think they can deliver a better product at a better price, they've got to go to the government and show that there's a need for that hospital. Well, the lobbyists up there on Jones Street in Raleigh, North Carolina are going to say, there's no need for that. Look, man, we've got these hospitals right here. We've got our prices set up high, and you know, we've got John Edwards running around chasing ambulances when he's not chasing women, while his wife is dying of cancer. And it's so institutionalized on both sides all around. I do think there's a lot of hope, though, in the Republican Party because of guys like Greg or Rand or Ted or, you know, Newt calling out the way things have been and how there needs to be drastic change, and Glenn Beck really hitting his stride on a lot of this stuff. I think we've got
We'll see how long that lasts with Glenn Beck. I'll be honest, I really don't trust Glenn Beck too much. But real quick, Chuck, we do have I'm going to keep your mic on, of course, and we'll come back to you, but I do want to let a good friend of ours in, and one of the panelists here on Bard's Logic, and the founder of Overpasses for Obama's Impeachment. And it's great to hear from you, James. How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Getting over this whole neck fusion surgery, and man, I tell you what, it still hurts, but it's a lot better than it was.
It's great to hear from you. I'm glad to hear that you sound good.
We missed you, James.
Well, I'm sorry. I was away for a bit, but
understand.
It's a good thing as far as things go. I think when it's all said and done and everything's healed up, I don't know. It's pretty amazing. It's like right now I still hurt, but guess what? It's only in one place where they did the work. But I'm like, hey!
Wow, so once that starts to fade, it'll be all better, and there'll be no more pain.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to that. I mean, it was to the point to where, I mean, my gosh, I wanted to cut off my own arms because the nerve damage was just causing them to be in constant excruciating pain, and that's it's gone, you know.
Awesome.
And it's just like, you know, yeah. So I may not be happy that I'm alive when Obama's president, but I'm certainly happy to be alive when we have modern medical technology. And, man, we got to stop Obamacare before we go back to leeches and eyes of Newt.
Yeah, before it destroys it. And what we got on the line here right now is Chuck Suter, and you're still doing the constitutionalwar.org, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely, man. We just we just confronted Robert Pittenger again the other day, and he smacked my video camera and grabbed it. He's ripe for a primary, and, you know, he came out, told me he was not – a little backstory for those listening real quick. I'll do it real quick. But he said he would not vote to defund Obamacare, and that video I put out made it on to Sean Hannity and just about every major Internet publication out there. And then he did vote to defund Obamacare, and then he touted that he did vote to defund it. And then when it came time to sell out with the 87 other Republicans who sold out on the shutdown, he sold right out, and, you know, he's running around. So Daryl Issa, walking failure Daryl Issa, who's never had a single success story come out of his oversight committee, brought his road show down here to North Carolina to talk about Obamacare and, you know, make a big media circus about it and try to save Robert Pittenger and Patrick McHenry's political careers. And I walked up on Pittenger afterwards and asked him, he grabbed my camera and didn't have any good answers for me. But the fight to defund and to repeal and not replace it with nothing continues, very much so.
Well, that's awesome. I'd definitely like to, you know, have you on in the near future. We could go over all the things you guys are doing over there at constitutionalwar.org. And, folks, definitely check that out at www.constitutionalwar.org. And as I mentioned earlier, Chuck, we do have James Neighbors here who I want to ask him how things are going with the overpasses for Obama's impeachment. And that's something that's going on in each of the 50 states, correct, James?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. You know, right now, our northern states, and it's creeping south, you know, Al Gore's global warming is gripping us all in a wave of cold, and so we're not exactly out on the overpasses today, and probably it looks like we're going to be in for a bit of a winter. And so we've moved to some more indoor activities and looking for more places to recruit. And we actually just, thanks to Harvard University, found out that we've got a whole new demographic that we can start recruiting from. Harvard University released yesterday a poll, and I think you'll all be very pleasantly surprised to hear this, that the 18 to 25 demographic, the ones that carried Obama into the White House in two presidential elections, now not only, and this is the majority of these voters, not only are they dissatisfied with President Obama's job in office, they want him removed from office.
All right.
The very people that ushered him in for two terms now say he should be removed from office.
Fantastic.
That's awesome. Young people are great because they're not set in their ways like old. They're not so set in their ways like old people are. You get these dyed-in-the-wool Democrats that have been Southern Democrats since their daddy was a Southern Democrat and his daddy was a Southern Democrat, and so it's hard to get them to, you know.
All of us here up in the North, too, Cindy.
Yeah, that you can switch. Well, same thing. But anyway, you can't get them to switch no matter what. But young people are still pliable and they're still impressionable, and you can still influence them one way or the other. And they are listening to ideas. They're listening and they're figuring it out for themselves. They're using their rational thought rather than just the party line or, you know, what daddy taught them, you know.
Well, so that's I think what's really slapping them in the face are two things right now. Is one, the unemployment rate for the 18 to 25 voting block is sitting at almost 25%, and so that means three out of four people know at least one guy that can't get a job. And you know what that says for the other three is probably two of those three have a substandard job. They just have a job.
And it's not in their field, right?
Exactly. And so they're not happy with the hope and change, and now they're hoping to change presidents.
Well, and folks, that's not even for the younger folk, too. I mean, I know some, you know, folks in their 30s and 40s who went back to college later on in life, And even when they came out, they don't have positions in what they studied for either. I mean, it might be more so with the younger folk because of their, you know, they don't have, you know, the experience in pretty much anything else as those in their 30s and 40s, but that affects those folks as well.
Well, it really does, and I'm not to really bash on colleges too much, you know, because I mean there are some fantastic degrees you can get that are you know absolute necessities and whatnot like that. But really, what people need to think about when they go seeking an education is what I'm going to go to school for to get educated, to spend these you know tens of thousands, perhaps you know hundreds of thousands of dollars, depending on how long you're going to go. Is it necessary for society to function? Obviously, a liberal arts degree is probably not going to get you a job in a comatose economy. And so really they need to look hard at it. I mean, I would have to say that you're better off probably right now going to electrician's technical school than you would be going to a university. Because let's face it, we kind of need electricity, but we don't really need that guy with the underwater basket weaving degree.
Oh, amen to that. I mean, computers too.
Underwater. I'm getting a visual on this. I'm trying to get a visual on the underwater basket weaving.
Well, even just a simple degree in computers. I mean, you know, my father went to, I think, a 6-month school after he quit truck driving when I was younger. And about 5 years old, he went and did 6 months and, you know, kind of self-taught with a little bit of help from a university how to become a computer programmer. And any of you out there who want to live the dream, my best friend who runs my website, he doesn't have much time to keep it up, but he does it pro bono, and he is able to sit at his house all day long and, you know, sit there and type away on the keyboard. And if he wants to go out for a 2-hour lunch and have a martini or whatever he wants to do, he can do it. And he's, you know, raking in, you know, $70,000, $100,000 a year, depending on how much he wants to work. So it doesn't take much. And all these degrees, I mean, this is what you're saying about the college. It's just, there's a documentary out there. I can't remember what it's called, but it's something about, you know, talking about how corrupt the college system is and how they keep raising the prices and the government is, you know, a big part of that as well. But you got these guys that are going out there and getting these degrees and, like, studying bugs or grass. And, I mean, one of them might rise to the top and actually get paid for it, but you're not going to, you know, there's just not a need for that in a recession, depression economy.
Well, those are environmentalist jobs. They'll get those.
Well, yeah, the government will fund some.
Hey, don't knock us environmentalists, Cindy.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting Robert where it hurts.
Yeah, Chuck.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think what we've got with the Obama overpass thing is great, though. It's going on here in North Carolina. It's one of those ideas that, you know, people just say, hey, that's something that we can do, and we need more people thinking about ideas outside of the box.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not completely sold on Bitcoin yet. I think that it's I think that if you're messing with the Federal Reserve, you are at the gates of Mordor, and you better be careful because they'll crush you like a bug. But you know, that's a great idea to come.
Mm-hmm.
You think outside the box. We've got this country is built on innovation. Think of what the unlocking of minds that has happened from the beginning of our country until now, and it's you almost think, man, if we can just circumvent, get around the government some way to come up with ideas, get around the media too. Hey, look, you know, Fox News is not always doing us justice. Obviously, they're my favorite thing
right.
on TV, which I don't have cable anymore, but you know, I used to pay for that $50 a month for, you know, 5 minutes a day that I'd watch it. But
yeah.
what you're doing, you know, what you're doing here with Blog Talk Radio, with you know, me doing a little website, somebody else doing something. Not everybody's going to be a success. But that's what America's about. It's about being able to try something, try it out, fall on your face, get back up, and then try again until you do succeed. As Ted Cruz would say, the little engine that could.
Who does, who
right now, speaking
Robert?
Of new technologies and in a bipartisan way, Newt Gingrich, I'm going to get this. Maybe I'll get it for Christmas now. But Newt Gingrich has a new book out called Breakout. And talks about, you know, new innovative ideas, you know, on getting the country moving, in, you know, into, you know, the 21st century. And that's, like, I can't wait to get it because I want to hear all those ideas he has. Because I tell you what, when he was running in 2012, you know, I mean, he's the only one of the Republican, and I'll watch it thoroughly, and you folks here know that. And he was the only candidate, really, that talked about American exceptionalism.
A new idea.
Yeah. You know, and I agree with American exceptionalism and the way that Newt articulates it, and some other folks don't really believe in it. Ron Paul is another one who talks about it, but he talks about it in a different way. I think the mix of what both of them say together is the truth, though. Newt really.
Paul, that would have been a powerful ticket. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it would have been unstoppable. But
I agree.
Newt, when he talks about it, he delivers it in a way that makes people. He's got a way
excited.
Of talking, like Ron Reagan did,
yeah.
has a way of inspiring people to take action, and that's what it takes. You know, 90% of success is just showing up, coming up with that idea for that overpass. Coming up with a blog talk radio show or what, you know, sometimes you're going to throw out an idea that people are going to, you know, now innovative people sometimes say, we're going to have a base on the moon. And then everybody says, oh, God, how could you possibly say it? Why shouldn't we? I mean, why shouldn't we? I don't think the government
right.
should want it. Let's find a way to unlock entrepreneurs, say, hey, you invest this much money into this type of thing, we're, you know, yeah, we'll there'll be no taxes spent on this if you're doing it for the, you know, a national security or just as much as a effort from the country of America, our country, to be able to do something like that. We should do something like that.
Well, the thing is, we could do something like that. You know, America can do a lot of things. The problem that we have right now is one word, and it's regulations, regulations, regulations. I mean, we have bogged down this country to the point to where, you know, when computers first came out, you know, and it's kind of show my age a little bit here, you had, I mean, hundreds of companies trying to come up with the best personal computer. And that was during the Reagan era, when the economy was booming, when people were investing money and their lives and their efforts into coming up with the next best thing. And it was because the government did not get in the way of these people doing that. And the way it is set up now is these corporations, and don't get me wrong, I'm not against businesses. What I am against are corporations bribing our government to pass regulations that stifle individual innovation, because it's an absolute nightmare for somebody to try to create a startup company with their idea.
Amen.
And it gives them a monopoly on those things.
It does, and that stifles innovation. And if one thing were to set America on the leading track once again to leading the world in everything, because let's face it, I mean, at one point and for a very long period of time in America, if it said made in America, it was what you bought. It didn't matter if it cost more because you knew it was going to be made better. You knew if the quality was going to be better, it was going to be a more ingenious, a more inventive product, and you knew that the company was going to come up with something even better in the future. And you wanted that thing. And that was because we didn't stand in the way of businesses doing things. But instead, you know, the mainstream media is a perfectly apt example of this in the fact that six people around the world now control 90% of the broadcast media that Americans are spoon-fed. And look at the innovation that has killed. Look at the actual real investigative reporting, the actual real news, the fighting amongst these reporters to come up with the best news. The analogy toward business is perfect because you've got a monopoly created by these six corporations that have stifled that innovation. And when you do the same thing in the business world, you stifle that innovation. Well, that guy has that idea, but now, in the way things are set up now, it is so difficult for that one guy that's got that idea that could change the world, you know, or just, you know, make life better for, you know, for a billion people, just in one little way. But because he's not a corporate monolith, he doesn't stand a chance because of the regulations that stand in his way.
Absolutely. You know what I would, you know, and I'm not always with Glenn Beck either, as we were talking about earlier, but that's one of the reasons that one of the things I do admire about Beck. I think he's a sensationalist sometimes. He's not all, but look, the system that he has built, down here at the Charlotte Tea Party, we've got probably the most organized tea party in our state here in North Carolina. It's called CAUTION. It's an acronym. And about 3 weeks ago, Doc Washburn and his sidekick, Skip, I think is his name, they do the morning show for Glenn Beck, The Blaze. And the final stop was here at our tea party. And I'm telling you what, these two guys are hilarious. They're upbeat. Their message was, hey, look, guys, we're winning. You know, let's keep going at it. You know, telling jokes, being funny about the NSA. Then the next morning they went up to a very popular gun range up here on the lake. I would like to plug them on here if I could remember their name, but I can't. The range at Lake Norman, actually, is the name of that gun range if you're ever down here. Beautiful, beautiful gun range. And they were up there shooting guns and broadcast out of there. But what Glenn has done with doing what he's doing is he's left the mainstream media. He's still somewhat mainstream, I guess, and he's trying to get his show on TV. But he said, you know, if you guys don't want me talking about what I want to talk about, I'm going to try to find a way to do it and leave all these millions behind and a much easier task behind me at Fox News or wherever, who else would pick him up if they didn't want to renew his contract. And that's what it takes. It's got to, you know, we, as a founder said, you know, pledge your lives, your fortune, and your sacred honor. And, you know, I think Glenn's doing a good job. I'm sure in a week or two he'll say something that'll make me, you know, eat my words. But, you know, a week or two after that he'll say another thing that's great or push another great idea. And as long as things are liquid, as long as there's new ideas coming out and there's failure is a good thing. As long as there's failures and successes, I think everybody benefits from that.
Well, you know, in regards to what you just said, I love all but one of the Rocky movies. You know, they're kind of cheesy and whatnot, but you know, you get snippets from those every once in a while that are really motivating. And I think this one is apt to what you're talking about. And what he says in that movie said, it ain't how hard you hit, it's how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. And you know, it doesn't matter if you fail once. doesn't matter if you fail twice. You know, Thomas Edison failed and failed and failed and failed and failed, you know, dozens of more times to invent one thing that every single one of us had grown up taking for granted, and that's the light bulb. And it wasn't the number of times he failed. It was the one time he succeeded, and it changed the entire world.
Forever. Forever it did. You're exactly right. That's not what it's not. America is not about anybody being able to succeed. Yes, that's part of it. America is about anybody out there being having the right and the ability to go out there and fail over and over again, not just once. I mean, most countries, you fail, sometimes they cut your head off. I mean, you know, we have had it so blessed in this country. Most politics, most business around the world, most just daily life around the world is at the point of a gun. You get divorced, you get killed. You fail in your business, you can't pay your debts, they cut your hands off. You on and on and on. And in America, you can fail over and over again, and you can get back up, and you can try again, and eventually, hopefully, you're going to change the world with a light bulb.
And Cindy, bring in your comments. Are you still with us?
Yeah.
There you are.
Yeah, I had myself muted because I was.
Oh, okay. I got to give you a little leg time. There you go.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, oh gosh, I had so much to say, but I put in the chat the link for Newt's speech that he gave fairly recently. I hope that everyone will go into the chat and get the link. It's on my Facebook page too. But this is an awesome speech because right now, what we really need is a strategy. We've got to have a strategy if we're going to be able to take back our country. And the Democrats and the elite GOPs have gotten us into a lot of trouble. And it's not going to be a simple strategy to get us out. Newt Gingrich has such a creative mind and such a way to simplify what really needs to be done. But he's just the master strategist. He's just awesome. And I haven't finished listening to it. It's 45 minutes long, I think. But it's got some excellent ideas in there. And if people would just listen to that man and implement some of the things he's doing or that he wants us to do, we could actually do something in this country and we could bring it back. We're just not listening to the people we need to be listening to. I'm listening to Chuck and James. They got great ideas and they're doing such a good job out there. And we're even starting to pick up a little bit of press on overpasses and things like that. What we need is a way to force ourselves into the media. And Gingrich has some really good ideas about that. And he has some good ideas about changing the party from within. However, I don't know if I can bring myself to believe that we can change the party. If I was back in the Reformation era, I would have been the separatist. I would have been the guy that was the separatist that just went across the ocean and went to live in another country to get my freedom. I would not have been the Puritan who stayed behind and tried to work within the church and change the things that were wrong about it. I guess I'm an escapist. I'm the type that I'd rather go start another party. But everybody's so fragmented. You got the libertarians who can't do this, and you got the conservatives that can't do that, and you got everybody kind of fractured, into these groups, these small groups. we have to get together if we're going to win this thing. We're going to have to allow each other to disagree on certain points, but to agree on the main thing, which is to stop the crazy spending, stop the crazy printing of money, and stop the crazy regulations and sending all the money to the banks. We've got to stop these crazy bailouts, okay? Those things have to be at the top of the list, and everything else has to be down below. And we deal with those things later, after we get the country back in some kind of semblance of order. Then when we can start working on our differences. But we've got to take those main things, immigration, bailouts.
I agree with you, and this is where this is where some of my friends, whether they be Ron Paul and a little bit libertarian leaning, or maybe more establishment leaning, this is where I've defended Newt through and through. I mean, he's the only guy that I've seen at these RNC meetings as I've gone around the country. I know we were on here talking about the Charlotte meeting. Newt was there. I'm not sure. I don't think I've seen him out in Hollywood. But from what I understand, he was up in Boston as well. And he's not completely outspoken trying to stop these rules changes that have really changed our party to be a lot more like the Democrat Party. And truthfully, if we don't get some adjustments in these rules, someone like Newt doesn't stand a chance, neither is Rand Paul or Ted Cruz. It's going to be Chris Christie in 2016.
Yep.
And these,
I would
encourage everybody to contact your committee man, your committee woman, and your state chairman, because that's who in your state's party, where one of those folks will be representing you at the winter meeting coming up here in late January. I'm not sure if the date has been pinned down yet, but those, a lot of those folks from Texas and Maine and other places are still working on these rules change issues. But Newt was there, and he was, sympathetic from day one, calling these rules changes absurd. And if we, we need to change all the things that Cindy just mentioned, we also need to make sure that our Republican Party represents all of the Republicans, including the establishment. I don't want to kick the establishment out. We can't be like them. If we become like them, then we become part of the problem. I'm open to anybody who wants to participate in the Republican Party. Let's have a battle of ideas. That's what Newt's always been about. That's what Ron Paul's always been about. Let's be a big tent, but let's not be a big tent just for the sake of being a big tent. Let's be a big tent that has big debates on big issues, and I think as long as we're respectful, we should be able to come together and unite under the banner of the Republican Party. And I'm not one that, I'm not even a Lincoln guy. I mean, that could be a whole other show there. I'm talking about the injustices and the similarities between Obama and Lincoln. What it's about, though, is being able to have the Democrat Party isn't going to give you this. The way the system's set up all across the country, you can be a libertarian, but we see what the Libertarian Party is. I guess I have some libertarian leanings, but the Libertarian Party is a joke. It's not Ronald Reagan conservatism through the banner of libertarianism at all. It's become Robert Sarvis, who's a leftist up in Virginia, taking away votes from Ken Cuccinelli. It's a joke. And some things we shouldn't have to compromise on, in my opinion. And one of those things is being things like pro-life. I don't think that that's something that we need to compromise on. Some of the other things, like I mentioned earlier, I think one of the things we need to be willing in the short term to compromise on to be able to reach out and get some of those disgruntled Democrats, and I think we can teach some of these old dogs some new tricks, especially when they see their premiums going up 500%.
Yeah.
I think we might be able to reach some of those guys.
Yeah.
Ron is actually giving us some help, isn't he?
Oh, absolutely. Look, a guy, Mike Rothfeld, he's a political genius. He's not very well known, but he's very intelligent and shrewd when it comes to politics. And as he stated, George Bush destroyed the term conservatism, but by the grace of God, Barack Obama has helped straighten it out.
it was compassionate conservatism, which, of course, I'm not against compassion or helping people out or anything of that nature. Sometimes you always get to put a disclaimer out there, it seems. But, you know, here was the compassionate conservative. In order for them to try to get anything conservative passed, they have to seem compassionate. And we've seen, unfortunately, you know, now with hindsight, you know, where that compassion is left us. So, yeah, I mean, by using the compassion conservative.
Compassion is not handing
really
out a handout, though. See, that's the thing. They're getting compassion all messed up. Compassion isn't handing somebody a check for doing nothing. Compassion is giving the guy a job and then handing him a check. That's
mm-hmm.
compassion.
No Child Left Behind, Medicare Part D, these are not compassionate things to do. These are big government, anti-compassionate, Democrat-leaning things. And, you know, I'm not here to
put the guys in compassion.
And I don't want to beat up on George Bush. I mean, you know, the guy did cut taxes. He did some things for gun rights. He did some things, okay, that I
think.
He
kept us from getting taxed for quite a number of years, too, again.
Come again?
I said, and I believe he did, you know, contribute to America not being attacked again, you know, for years.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And as flawed as I think a lot of his foreign policy was, he wasn't, you know, knowingly funding the Muslim Brotherhood. Maybe there was a case here or something where some money got misplaced or we dealt with the wrong people. Sure, you can expect that. Right now what we have in the White House is somebody who is trying to destroy this country and put us under a global government.
Mm-hmm,
well,
certainly.
you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, just, you know, his demeanor itself is just, I never in my life imagined that we would have a president with the arrogance that he has, really for nothing. I mean, think about what he's actually accomplished aside from being elected twice. He got Obamacare passed.
Shut down people's throat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, aside from that, it's a room full of crickets. The man has he has nothing to be prideful about as far as his presidency, unless his goal is to destroy America. And fundamentally changing the greatest country in the world, I'm thinking that, maybe it doesn't need fundamental changing. Maybe what it needs is some tweaking and some streamlining and some, you know, taking the brakes off and hitting the accelerator. You don't reinvent the wheel when the wheel's still rolling. And that's what we've got with Obama. You know, the fact that he panders to these people that scream death to America. And we shouldn't pander to them. We should be ruthless to them. You know, at the very, very least, we should abandon them. Let's say, you had that little natural disaster. Isn't that a shame? Too bad you screamed death to America and burned our flag. You know, maybe when you start treating us with some respect, we'll start having a little bit of respect for you in return. And, you know, we need to have pride in what this country is and, you know, help our allies and don't help our enemies. Taking I mean, what really kills me is this money that we're sending to Al-Qaeda and the Muslim Brotherhood. It isn't even our money. It's the Chinese's money
that we're paying the bill for.
No, we got to get them, right.
You know,
Go ahead, James. Finish your thought, and then I do have an excerpt from the video that Cindy was referring to with Newt Gingrich and his speech. I'm going to play a little bit of that, but go ahead. Your thought before I do that.
Oh, no, just go ahead. I mean, real quick, finish it up. I mean, if we're going to be loaning money to anybody, we need to be solvent first. It needs to be our money that we are loaning, not the money we borrowed to loan. Because why in the world, I mean, that's like, hey, Robert, would you loan me $20 and I'll pay 20% interest on it, and then I'm going to go to my friend Bob here and just give him the money. But, hey, I'm still paying for the – that makes no sense.
It's like me taking out a home equity loan.
That guy wants to give that money to
somebody to pay for their house.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's just, you know, the fact is that type of policy will drive this country into bankruptcy. And, you know, that might be exactly what we need, because they say if we default on the loan, the whole world goes into an economic depression. And, well, the last time there was a great big worldwide depression, well, a whole lot of people that didn't have money suddenly were able to come up with ways to make money. And a lot of people that had a lot of money and influence suddenly were jumping out of buildings.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I can't say for certain. I'm no economist, but looking back at history, maybe we just need to hit the reset button on the worldwide economy and let the chips fall where they may. It happened once before, and it turned out pretty good.
Yeah, we had a guy on the show, I unfortunately can't recall his name, but he was talking about, you know, alternative, not alternative currency, but an alternative to, of course, there's not enough gold now for there to be a gold standard for the U.S. dollar, but there's enough precious metals that you can have, instead of a gold standard, be more of a precious metal standard to have the money based on. So I think that's a good idea. I might have to re-listen to that audio and hear that again.
Even a commodity standard where you would have wheat and rice and steel and gold and silver and, you know, oil and gas and coal and everything, just so that there's something to keep these cronies, these internationalists that, you know, are born into money, never lift a finger, and sit there and move decimals around to be able to line their pockets for the next couple hundred years. We've got to get away from that. And unfortunately, it was Richard Nixon, a Republican, who was actually not nearly as bad as people made him out to be. He did get us out of the Vietnam War, hello, leftists out there who want to blame Republicans for all this stuff. But, you know, Nixon is actually not nearly as bad as they make him out to be. But that was the stain, I think, on his presidency more than anything, was getting us off the gold standard. But, yeah, commodity standard, that's what we need, something like that.
And at this time, we'll get back to this definitely. There's plenty of time. There's a half hour of live time. But, of course, as you all know, especially for those who are continuing listeners of the program, you know that we do go into an extended version that is open to us. But at this time, I will play an excerpt of that speech from Newt Gingrich. So give me a few moments to cue it, and we'll have it on.
Don't go away, Chuck, because I want to ask you something.
I'm sticking with you guys. I love it, man.
Okay.
it's a great show, and you know, I need to get on here more often.
Program deep enough that when people get elected, they know what they're going to do from the first day, or they get absorbed by the old order. So we're going to develop a 4P program over the next year and a half. What if we had total control in January of 13 at every level, school board, county commission, city council, what policies would we implement? What processes would we implement? What personnel could actually get the job done? And how do you get public support for it so you can sustain it? Because I don't want us to see, I don't want us to win one time and then get crushed because people didn't understand what we're doing. So if you have that happen, let me go back to the argument. Because I think the first phase is doing the argument. I'm going to give you three questions that I believe are going to define America for a generation. And they're not complicated questions. Who are we? What does it take to compete successfully with China and India economically? What threatens us, and how do we keep America safe? Those are the three questions. And the difference between the secular socialist left and the rest of us is so startling that when you get to this level of basic values, we are a 70, 80, or 90% country, and they're in somewhere between a 9 and 15% minority. But you've got to get to these values. First, who are we? My personal belief is we are historically a people endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, I am prepared to polarize the country on that issue. And let me explain why. First of all, as compared to the secular socialist model, the American model, this is in a political document, not a theological document, but it is in the Declaration of Independence. You can see it at the National Archive. Twist and I just published a new version of Rediscovering God in America with her photos, and you can actually see all this. You can see it in our movie, Rediscovering God in America.
And that was just a short excerpt from a part of it. Now you want to ask Chuck something, so go ahead, and I'm going to queue up another part of it. Of the audio. Go ahead, Cindy.
Well, I wanted to ask Chuck what he thought was going to, I mean, you know, Morton Blackwell has been doing such a great job trying to repeal all those, the worst of those bad rules that they changed at the convention. And I was just wondering if that, has that hit a dead end? Or have we hit a brick wall with that, or do we still have a chance to get some of those rules reversed and power back in the grassroots?
Oh, absolutely. A quick backstory on Morton Blackwell. You know, for folks that don't know, he's the guy who was the youngest delegate to Barry Goldwater's San Francisco 1964 convention. He's been on the Rules Committee for the past 24 years, been to every single RNC meeting. He runs the Leadership Institute, which is a great operation. Chris Doss is a big part of that in Virginia. Texas has the biggest convention every year for Republican states. Virginia is right behind them, a much smaller state that has about 18,000 people to their Republican convention, state convention every year. And if we had more states that were acting like Virginia, this rules change would have never happened. Newt has been supporting us. Morton is obviously the lead guy out in California. It was a stalemate. And in Boston at the summer August convention, it was, you know, not much happened either. Although this is, I want to give you a real quick example of what you can do. A friend of mine here, Nicole Revels, in our state of North Carolina that runs a Carolina Liberty Pack, she's been on this show a couple times. She wrote up a resolution and pretty much forced our new chairman to take it up to Boston to say that the Republican Party, it is part of our platform now that the National Republican Party demands of our Republicans that they shall support defunding Obamacare. This is a 26-year-old single mother, okay, single-parent mother that was able to do this. I mean, just this is what you can do, folks. If you get involved, these rules will change. If nobody stands up, they won't get changed, and that's why I encourage everybody to do what they can and go to these conventions. Hey, they started charging $50 because so many people are showing up now, but that $50 is going to get you 3 days of some really nice food and as many drinks as you want and Starbucks coffee, and it's worth it, and it's a good time to meet people across the country. The fight is definitely not over. This winter meeting, I think, is going to be crucial. I think it's the most important meeting probably maybe in the history of the Republican Party, because these meetings were never all that important. I mean, they were important, but they've become more important than ever now. And I would say that this winter meeting coming up in January is going to determine whether it's going to be Chris Christie or the possibility that it could be Chris Christie and it could be somebody else. Because I don't want to make it to where Chris Christie can't get the nomination. I don't want to shove him out, although I'm totally against the guy. I think he should be running as a Democrat. But we want to have an open playing field where the Ron Paul and the Newt Gingrich and the Rick Perry and the Michelle Bachmans all have a fair shot, and the Rick Santorums all have a fair shot. And no, the fight is not over. It is it's cliche to say it's just beginning. I don't think it's just beginning. I think it's really coming into the home stretch, though. If we don't get some changes made in this meeting, and nobody's talking about it right now, there needs to be a buzz coming out of the holidays and into January, and a big push. And we need folks like Newt, and we need other voices. You know, hopefully Ron Paul will step up and say something, and some others will step up and back Morton Blackwell. The guy has done things. He's an unsung hero of conservatism in this country. The things that he's done to recruit young college students that could have ended up Marxists and have turned them into Goldwater conservatives is just unbelievable. And, you know, he's an unsung hero, and he's not looking for any credit either, but I'm going to give it to him.
Yeah, he doesn't really look for credit. But that's what I like about Newt, too, because Newt's not one to look for credit either. He just puts himself out there and he says, hey, if you can use me here, use me. If you can't, you know, that's your call. But he doesn't really go after the hoopla, you know, and I think that's part of why he and Ron Paul both had trouble in the last election. We were so close. After talking to some of the delegates, we were so close to a brokered convention, it was ridiculous. I think that if Ron Paul and Newt had stood up for themselves a little bit more and went for some of that attention, we might have a different picture today than what we have.
Well, from what I understand, from what my sources have told me, and from what, you know, talking to different committee men and committee women that are sympathetic to us, some of them openly, most of them not so openly sympathetic to us, is what they were told is if Newt or Ron Paul tried to do anything, and Santorum really didn't seem like he was interested at all, which he would have been great if those three could have found a way to come together, that would have been great. But it was really, you know, kind of Newt and Ron to be able to come together for this. We could have actually made a change, and a broker convention would have been the best thing to ever happen to the Republican Party, because everybody would have said, you know what? Okay, we can actually affect change in the Republican Party, whether our guy gets the nomination or not. That would have been a shot. That would have been an adrenaline shot mixed with steroids, shot right into the main aorta vein, and the Republicans and the Tea Party and everybody would have just been bonkers. It would have been Ted Cruz and Rand Paul's filibuster wrapped up into one 365. And what was happening, though, is Romney's people were ready to destroy Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich forever. Just dig up every last bit of dirt on each, on both of them, on Ron and Newt, and just destroy their destroy their image and their everything that they've done, and offer Romney. Romney is not a team player. He plays the nice guy to say, hey, be a team player with me. Romney is the least team player that there is, and that's where the establishment always is. They are never team players. They demand that we play with them, and they never play with us.
No,
and I think we can really boil that down to one of the biggest players in the RNC, and that it's we have just got to say no to Karl Rove.
Yeah.
Because we can thank him for Mitt Romney and this onslaught of moderate Republicans that he's just, you know, we need to forget being moderate. You know, because moderate is it's gray. It's like oatmeal without sugar in it. You know,
it doesn't win elections, presidential elections either.
What? I'm sorry. What was that, Robert?
No, I said it doesn't win presidential elections. There hasn't been a moderate Republican, or at least one that ran as a moderate Republican in 30 years, won a general election.
Well, exactly. And we need to, we need to get rid of the Karl Roves and whatnot that are in politics. You know, we need to get rid of this corporate buyout of our politicians. I mean, the so-called campaign finance reform that was co-authored by John McCain did the exact opposite of what they claimed it would, and it made things worse by a long shot. It's nice that I can go out and fill out the IRS paperwork to turn over passes into a political action committee, you know, a 527 and not a 501c3, because it allows us to go out and still protest and we're still nonprofit. But these super PACs that are out there that can donate unlimited funds and can take money from overseas that can alter elections here in the United States. Overseas money? I mean, really? We're letting foreigners influence elections in America. How that ever came to pass in American politics, it'd be one thing if it were like Microsoft donating billions of dollars I'm not saying it's right. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a proponent of that. But it's one thing entirely if it's an American company such as Microsoft or Apple that's donating billions of dollars into a particular party's campaign fund and it gets spent here in America for American politics. But when you've got countries like Saudi Arabia and China and whatnot, you know, dumping billions of dollars into our elections, that's treason in my book, because we should never ever, there should never ever be a foreign nation that can, other than having their people that support them live here in the United States, you know, get out on the streets and support them. I mean, okay, that's fine. That's free speech. I'm all for free speech, but not bribery by foreign nations into our political arena. That has got to absolutely end.
Yep.
And until we can stop the foreign influx of money into our elections, it's going to get bad. I mean, you think it's bad now. I mean, you know, we only signed, you know, the UN treaty, you know, we didn't, but, you know, Obama's administration did, the small arms, the treaty that basically destroys our Second Amendment. I can't remember the exact name of it.
Yeah, the small arms handgun treaty or something of that nature.
Yeah, that one. The rest of the world doesn't give a hoot about our Constitution. And, you know, what difference does it make to them that we have the right as Americans to bear arms? Well, it doesn't matter to them. They don't understand that concept because, well, they've not grown up. They've not had it as a nation for 237 years. And
they don't understand that because we're the ones, us having guns, is the reason that they have any kind of freedom.
Absolutely, and what you talk about with Karl Rove, I mean, I was glad to hear Mark Levin, who I do disagree with on nullification, and I wish he would get off the Rachel Maddow line on nullification. But that aside, we uh, We protested Karl Rove. He came to town about 2 weeks ago, and he came to town for a fundraiser for his Rhino Choice, Tom Tillis, our Speaker of the House here in North Carolina. The guy is horrible, as Eric Erickson of Red State has talked about. The guy is just absolutely horrible. Karl Rove held a fundraiser for him and is holding a couple of them for Tommy. And, you know, Mark Levin actually covered our protest where we were there with the Tea Parties from around our area protesting Rove. And if you look at Rove's record, he had an 82% failure rate in 2012. Uh-huh. And now he's working with Orrin Hatch to primary Mike Lee. He's trying to push for Tom Tillis. He's going to help Mitch McConnell, and I really hope Rand will rescind his endorsement and go with Matt Bevin. And I think Rand will coming out next year, and that's going to kill McConnell when Rand does that. But you know, that's, you know, like I was saying earlier, this guy Greg Brannon, who's running in our state of North Carolina, you know, this is Karl Rove tactics are coming down on him, and he's just absolutely any way he can trying to destroy this guy who's a 22-year OBGYN, 20,000 patients, 9,000 babies delivered, conservative. I mean, him and his wife have adopted three children from China, daughters from China. This guy knows the Constitution like a Newt Gingrich or a Rand Paul. And, you know, Karl Rove is here. He's pushing this guy. It's going to get really, really nasty with what Karl Rove is doing around the country here in 2014. And we need all hands on deck to stand up against this guy.
Oh, I mean, it's like, you know, like Nancy Reagan said in the 80s, just say no. If Karl Rove is attached to that candidate, just say no.
Say no.
Yeah.
And real quick, folks, I do see it's 8 minutes before the hour. And so we only have about 7 minutes or so of live time. So for those out there listening, unless you call in at 347-945-7428, you will not be able to hear or participate in the extended version of Bard's Logic Political Talk. Again, if you'd like to hear the extended version, you can call in at 347-945-7428. And, of course, if you cannot, we appreciate if you just come back and listen to the archives, which will be available immediately after the show. And what I'd like to do now, folks, is I do have another portion of the speech queued up, and so I would like to play a few minutes of that, and then we'll move on. Okay, go ahead, Cindy.
Robert, wait. Before you go, I'm going to put a into the chat here. This is a petition, well, not a petition, it's a straw poll. No, I'm not going to do that one first. I'm going to put he's kind of got a thing going where you're in the Committee for America, okay, and you sign up and you can be a part of a conference call with Newt. And I guess some people will be able to speak if they get there soon enough. But anyway, you have to sign up. So I put the link in there so that you could – oh, I hit send. What happened? Okay, there we go. You can go – you go to newt.org/call, C-A-L-L, and you can get on there and sign yourself up so that you can get the notifications – when he's going to have his conference calls, and you can actually get on there and maybe give him your opinion and give him your support. If we don't give Newt our support, he may feel like he's not doing anything, and he may exit. We need Newt to stay in it. We need his ideas. We need his help with media, and we need his help with strategy. Anyway, so that, and then I'm also going to put in there
a straw poll, a Tea Party straw poll. Have you seen this one? It's a straw poll that for the 2016 president.
I'm not sure I've seen a couple of them. What organization?
It just says Tea Party Patriots Citizens Fund 2016 straw poll.
Yes, I've seen that one. Yeah, the Tea Party Patriots. That's a great Tea Party national network, and Tea Party News Network is another good one as well.
Okay, well, that one's in there too. Go there and do the straw poll. I, of course, wrote in. They don't even have Newt Gingrich's name on the straw poll, and that's probably because he hasn't asked for it. He hasn't said it, but they have Sarah Palin on there, so I'm like,
right.
You know, why not Newt, right? But anyway, I wrote. There's a place where you can write in, and I wrote in Newt Gingrich. They got Scott Walker there, and Paul Ryan, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, and Rand Paul, and Sarah. Those are the names. Those are the pictures and the names they have.
No Paul Ryan, please. No Paul Ryan. I mean, real quick, that reminds me of Eric Cantor's guy up there. He left Eric Cantor's chief of staff, went and worked for the mixed socialist guy who ran against Cuccinelli in the Virginia governor's race. These guys, you know, they go and work for the Democrat Party in the blink of an eye. It's ridiculous.
Well, anyway, that's in the chat, too, if y'all will go there and give the Tea Party your idea about who you think should be the 2016. Thankfully, they didn't even put Christie on there. I was actually surprised to see that,
but.
Yeah, we're not going to give him the time of day, they're thinking, you know. So that's good.
Right.
That's good news. Okay, sorry, Robert. I just.
Oh, no, that's okay. It's great to get that out there to the folks. And I'm going to post that later on this evening after the show on the Bard's Logic Political Talk Facebook page for people can access it there as well. And while you're at it, in filling out that straw poll or signing up for the newsletter, go ahead and push the like button and like the Facebook page. And so we'll go ahead and play that audio clip, and I do see that there's only a couple minutes of live time. So before I do that, I'd like to thank the folks who are listening to the show here, either through Blog Talk Radio or some of the other venues that the show has listened through. Appreciate it, such as those, as you, I know you can listen through iTunes and some other methods. So thank you very much for coming to the live show. We look forward to you coming with us next week, where we will have the founder of the PatriotJournalist.com and Twitter team on next week to talk about all what they do at PatriotJournalist.com. And if you'd like to check it out earlier, just go to www.PatriotJournalist.com. They do some really great things there, and they're really starting to make some influence. If you didn't come to the beginning of the show, we give an example of the part they played in getting Bashir, at least, you know, what I believe is the part they played getting Bashir to step down by the pressure that was brought to bear on MSNBC through all the Twitter work that they were doing and getting that message out. So give me a few moments, as I said, to set up this audio, and we'll enjoy some more of Newt Gingrich.
Take to win, and I want to talk, but I want to talk to you about it at a much deeper level than we've been through. And I think this is part of why you have today a Tea Party movement, is because we haven't been getting straight talk out of our politicians, and people have been dancing past things they don't want to talk about, and we have been trying to compromise the uncompromising. Now, I think it's important to understand that the 2004 election was a wasted opportunity. I wrote a paper that year, you can get at newt.org, in which I outlined that in 57 issues, John Kerry was, on average, in a 77 to 17 minority. Remember, John Kerry was to the left of Ted. John Kerry was a setup for the next great George McGovern, Walter Mondale, moment of absolute annihilation left. And you couldn't get the Bush team to pay attention because they were determined to run a base mobilization, narrow margin victory, focusing on crushing Kerry as a person. Largely, I think, because they were so uncomfortable with ideas. They then couldn't recognize that a president who doesn't veto guarantees stupid spending. It is impossible for the Congress to police itself. It's only been done one time in modern history for 4 years, and I personally did it. We had, within the 4 years I was Speaker, we had two prominent, let me finish this, because people don't understand this. In the 4 years I was Speaker, total federal spending, including the entitlements, went up 2.94% a year. That is the lowest rate since Calvin Coolidge. In the absence of a remarkably powerful speaker, and you couldn't sustain it. Part of the reason I ended up not being speaker is I kept saying no to a lot of people. In the absence of a speaker that strong, you have to have a president who vetoes bills. And to have a deal that says you can pass anything no matter how stupid and I'll sign it. And then remember the second half of the deal, which is Congress didn't do its investigative work, and they basically said you can have a bureaucracy of unbelievable incompetence and we won't expose it. After all, we're on the same team. The big spending, bad governing, bureaucratic team. The average American looked up and said, if I want to get that kind of behavior, let's get Democrats. They're at least happy doing it. So in 2005, Bush goes to New Orleans after 5 days of watching this country go through an agony on television, and he says, Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. Now, he never recovered from that. Because the average American looked up and said, if he doesn't understand New Orleans is a disaster, and he doesn't understand this guy is incompetent, what does that tell me about Baghdad? What does that tell me about everything else that's going on? So in 2006, the country tried to send a signal. We were 0-for-6 in close Senate races. Many of you gave tons of money. I want to tell you up front, money spent without purpose in a campaign without an argument is a waste of money. When you're 0-for-6 in close Senate races, it is not a personality problem. It's a fundamental repudiation. We lost the House. We lost. And I started saying this, by the way, in January of 2006. I mean, go back and Google it. Because I said, if you're not a reform party and you're not dominating October with reform, you are going to get crushed. So now you come to 2008. And people don't realize this, but because of American Solutions, and because we picked up the theme of drill here, drill now, pay less, and because Sean Hannity helped us and we got 1,500,000 signatures in 6 weeks, and the House Republicans took it up brilliantly. The Senate Republicans were confused as usual. But the House Republicans picked it up brilliantly, and the House Republicans waged a campaign in August that was fabulous. And the result was, the week before Wall Street collapsed, the Republicans were ahead by 5 points in the generic ballot, and McCain was up by 3 because we were winning an argument. We weren't pitting our guy against their guy. We were pitting our vision of the world against their vision of the world. We will always win if we have the courage to do that. And then in 2008, the Republicans lost an election in one of the great, I believe, ironic moments in American history. The Democrats totally misunderstood the election. The 2006 and 2008 elections are performance elections. We were fired for not performing. They were not values elections. They were not realignment elections. A leading Democrat consultant said the other day, the great crisis for the Democratic Party is that they don't understand their first actual election is coming up in 2010. They were the heirs of the Republican failure. My daughter, Jackie Cushman, writes a weekly column and wrote about 2 months ago, we were told we were voting for change you can believe in, and we found we were voting for somebody who wanted to change what we believed. And that's what came together. Now, here's my proposition for all of you to think about and organize yourself for the next 3 years. The combination of Obama, Pelosi, and Reid is creating a decisive moment in American history that may be the most decisive since the 1850s. because they are making so vividly clear, and I just got from David his newest little book on, which is exactly right. In fact, I have a copy of Alinsky's book on my desk right now for the same reason. I mean, what we're going to discover is that you have the most radical president in American history with the most radical Speaker of the House, with a total opportunist of Senate Majority Leader. Harry Reid's not particularly radical. He's just happy to be with whatever group is in charge. And what's the result?
And, of course, folks, that was before the 2012 election, and a lot of what he said came to pass, well, we've seen has come to pass, and how this country did not end up with this man being the President of the United States, as my friend Mark Presley has pointed out, that it is a tragic mistake and a loss of a national treasure. And so what I'd like to do at this point is to open up the mics. I give deference to the ladies first. So we'll go with Cindy, and then we'll go with you, Chuck, and then we'll go over to you, James. So, Cindy, you have the floor. What's your thoughts?
Wow. All I can say is just wow. You're right. We lost our chance to have a national treasure. We lost our chance to have a Reagan that was actually better than Reagan, actually. I mean, he had more solutions and more invigorating, energetic plans, strategies, things to get the heart of the American people pumping again, things to get them wanting to step off and go try something and do something with themselves and make this country better. Now, what are we all doing? We got Obama for what, 6 years now? And we have nothing. It's like an emptiness. Everybody's stifled. They don't want to start a new business. They don't want to go out and try to find that other job. They're just hanging on to the job they have now. They're worried about how they're going to pay their bills. They're worried about this health insurance bill that we're going to have pretty soon. And it's a dark cloud over the nation instead of a bright new day. And it's really a sad thing. It's really, really a sad thing. I can't think of anything that would have been better than to have Newt Gingrich as president with Ron Paul as vice president, pushing him in the side saying, come on now, Newt, you got to do this. You got to do this. You know, I can see it now how cool it would have been. And Newt's with all his ideas and everything and going full force. And I mean, with that guy, you almost have to hold him back a little bit. You know, well, wait a minute, Newt. Now, wait, we can't go that fast, you know.
Yeah,
anyway,
it's like the country's in a lingering depression. Go ahead, Cindy.
It is. And it's not just a depression financially. It's the depression
right,
in
exactly.
our heart.
Exactly. Yeah, I meant like just like the country's depressed, like an emotional depressed as a country.
Yeah, exactly. He's just
awesome.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Look, I was not a Newt Gingrich supporter. I was a Ron Paul supporter. Newt was, I would say definitely my second choice when it came to what we had to choose from in that situation. The thing is, I think that if our Republican Party, if it was a debate between, hey, should we go with Ron Paul or should we go with Newt Gingrich? There wouldn't be a need for your radio show or my website. I mean,
yeah.
There just wouldn't.
You know,
I mean, if
you sound
every
like
night, yeah, if every night on Sean Hannity and every night on Bill O'Reilly and every day, you know, I mean, God bless Rush, and he's been fair, I think, to Newt and to Ron, and he just stays neutral on a lot of stuff. But
except on the eve of the Florida primary, that's where Rush actually blew it for us.
Yeah, he kind of lied. Well, he didn't kind of, he did. And don't take my word for it. you know, let's listen to, and it's very brief, and let's listen to Rush Limbaugh's, I've heard people, I don't listen to him anymore, but, you know, I've heard people talk about Rush, and, you know, oh, well, he needs, you know, back to his conservatism, but I really think he really did it for us. I agree, and I'm getting the audio clip for that together, and then we'll move on. But let me see if I can get here. Here it is. This is what we're talking about.
By the way, folks, just I have to remind you again that Gingrich debated John Kerry on global warming one point, and they agreed on practically every point. Nobody is innocent. Everybody is guilty of some transgression at somewhere against conservatism, except Santorum. See you tomorrow.
And that wasn't even, I mean, he said everyone, and that was including Ron Paul as well. And
I don't know what
here's the thing. Here's the thing, and this is where Rush, you know, he's an entertainer. And, you know, it's hard to forgive him for those types of situations. He did the same thing to Ron Paul when Ron Paul was coming up. And, you know, to say Santorum's the only one who's not guilty is just completely laughable, considering he voted for Medicare Part D and for No Child Left Behind and got behind the TARP. And he also went and campaigned for Christine Toad Whitman when she was running. Governor of New Jersey, she was even worse than Chris Christie, and this woman isn't pro-choice, she's pro-abortion, and Santorum sacrificed every single one of his principles on abortion because it was the right thing to do, and that was shortly after he went and campaigned for a guy Rush Limbaugh had on his show and saved the campaign of Arlen Specter, who ended up changing his affiliation to a Democrat. So, yeah, listen, I could go on and on about that. But what
100, and a 100% labor voter.
Oh, absolutely. You can't be anything else in Pennsylvania. I mean, I grew up right next to it. But here's the thing. It's not about Rush Limbaugh. It's not about Glenn Beck. It's not about any of these guys. It's really about the grassroots. And for all their faults and all their warts, I think these guys, in the end, you know, we've got to look at the good parts. Even Mark Levin, who I'm critical of, and I'm guilty of just bashing these guys. And we've got to hold them their feet to the fire. But let's stay positive. We've got to be happy warriors. I think my disagreements with Newt or whoever else, but, I mean, let's face it. There were two rock stars in this race in 2012, and it was Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul, and both of them have incredible ideas that really bring us back to the time of the founders when people are, you know, it's the debates between Madison and Hamilton and Henry and these types of debates where it's like, hey, I like this founding father better, but they were all great. You know what I'm saying? And these other guys like Romney and Karl Rove and Chris Christie and John McCain, oh, my goodness. I mean,
they can't even be mentioned in the same breath as John George Washington and Madison
and
Adams.
Or Henry. Yeah, I mean, look, and this is the thing, you know. So, you know, these other candidates, they know those names. They can quote those names when it comes down to it. You're not going to hear anybody else in that 2012 debate crowd quote somebody like Adam Smith, Wealth of Nations, other than Newt and Ron Paul. And you're not going to have, you know, you're not going to hear any intelligent words come out of anyone's mouth when talking about John Locke or any of these other founding fathers that are not as well known but are rock stars to folks like us who study the Constitution. And that's what it really comes down to. It comes down to us being able to find a way for us radicals who really, truly believe in what our founders did and understand it as well.
Yep.
Newt understands it. Ron Paul understands it. Newt puts his foot in his mouth, and so does Ron Paul. But we've got to get past that part where they put their foot in their mouth and focus on all the great stuff they say, because Romney's not going to put his foot in his mouth because he'll never say anything.
Right.
Right. It's nothing new anyway.
Yeah, exactly. He's got talking points. He's got a Frank Luntz what are they called? Things, you know, where
it's
they
the
go
weather
in.
Vane.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
The weather vane.
Yeah, they test out, they've tested out how to say this, how to say that. And they've got all the talking points down and in a row, and they stick to the script, and they never go outside of the parameters of this, that, and the other, because the voting public wants to hear it. You know, it's like, come on, man. Let it fly. If you mess up, come out. You know, Ron Paul's admitted when he's messed up. Newt said, the worst thing I've ever done was sit on that couch with Nancy Pelosi.
Right,
I
remember that. And I remember the commercial, too.
I don't believe for a second that Newt Gingrich, if he was elected president, would invoke a carbon tax on the people of America. He said, okay, I'm thinking about something else. My mind is somewhere else. You're asking me to sit on a couch. So I sat on a couch and shot a commercial while I'm thinking about other things, about how to save the country, and I messed up. And everybody
Also the context, and then I want to bring you in, James, after I make this comment, when he talked about, you know, greenhouse gases and things of that nature, I believe they do exist, whether they're causing global climate change. I'm skeptical about that. I'm really not even though I'm an environmentalist, I don't really believe that. But however, something should be done to curtail it, and we all know that Newt Gingrich is a futurist, and that's, you know, and as a futurist, that's one of the things that he would like to see addressed is, you know, curtailing, you know, the amount of greenhouse gases that do go into the atmosphere. And, you know, so that's kind of the angle, the scientific, you know how much of a scientific mind he has, the angle that Newt Gingrich, at least that's my take on it, when he did the commercial with Nancy Pelosi. So what do you think, James, of what we've got here so far? Still have you there, James, or are they sometimes?
Sorry about that.
Oh, there you go. That's okay.
I had my mute turned on there.
That's okay. We all do that. I've done that. I've began
you
a show and gone to the beginning, my beginning spiel, as I call it, and then somebody in chat says, "Robert, I don't hear you." I'm like, I have myself on mute.
Yeah.
So I've done that on occasion in the beginning of the show. Go ahead, James.
But I think what really killed Newt in 2012 and is really what Barack Obama capitalized on in 2008, and it's really what's going on right now within, I think, across the whole country, even with the Democrats, and that's the fact that we really do want hope and change from the status quo. And I think a lot of the country looked at Newt's long career in Washington, D.C., and viewed him as just another part of the old machine. And I think that's what killed him, is the fact that, you know, it's like, you know, we need to do something different, but this guy's been around since Reagan was in office. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but what I'm saying is the perception that it put across with him is the fact that, well, how much change are we going to get from a guy that's been around since the 80s? And don't get me wrong, the contract with America was, I loved it. I mean, that's I can still remember that, and the fact that it worked, and the fact that, you know, and what he said in his quote as far as, you know, spending increases, you know, when he was Speaker of the House. I mean, his record speaks for itself, but it was the perception, and that's what Barack Obama capitalized on was this hope and change. And America wants that badly right now. We need it badly, but not the type of change that we're getting from Barack Obama. What we need to change is to change away from the socialist direction we're heading. But nobody really, nobody that voted for him anyway, looked into his past to see that, you know, I mean, come on, you know, Sayers, he's friends with a guy that was a member of the Weather Underground and said his only regret for the bombings that he did of government installations was he didn't do enough. I mean,
right.
The guy, you know, and the fact they didn't do this research, but the people of America are tired of business as usual in Washington, D.C., and I think it, unfortunately, for Newt Gingrich is, and I think that's what got him. It wasn't really him. It was that specter of old politics. And
yeah, but people had forgotten what he did that was so change. I mean, revolutionary back in the 90s, and he was with his 20th century or 21st century contract with America. He was going to be proposing another. He did propose another wave of revolutionary changes once again. And the thing is, I tell you what, James, you're absolutely right. He got, I did a lot of phone calls for him. I went to three different states to help out his campaign. And what I kept hearing on the phone constantly was, he's one of the establishment. Well, if he
was
one
so
of the establishment,
wrong.
I want to know what they were doing to him down there in Tampa. If he was establishment, they would have put him up there, and that he would have been our nominee, because he could have debated Obama into a corner, into the fetal position, okay? And the reason why he is like that is because he's a member of the CFR. That is his downfall. But it's also Newt Gingrich. He has his hands in everything. He has his feelers out. He's learning constantly. He's a prolific reader, a prolific writer, and he's always looking to the new idea, and he wants to know what everybody is doing. And when you're in the CFR, you know what everybody's doing. And you need someone in the CFR that's going to know what they're doing and know how to combat what they're doing. And so, yes, you're right, James. He got a bad rap being the moniker of elitist stuck to him, or establishment stuck to him, and it shouldn't have.
And someone mentioned the contract with America earlier, and I just have a real brief, just 30-second audio clip, and this is what Romney had to say about the contract with America.
Let me tell you, in my view, it is not a good idea to go into a contract like what was organized by the Republican Party in Washington, laying out a whole series of things which the party said, these are the things we're going to do. I think that's a mistake. I think instead that if you want to get something done in Washington, you don't end up picking teams with Republicans on one side and Democrats on the other, entering into a contract and saying, okay, we're all going to do this, and then, of course, that works, then the other side feels like they're the loser. But if it wins, they feel like the winner. I don't like winners and losers in Washington. I'd rather say let's get together and work together.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, let's just light up a campfire and sing Kumbaya while we're at it, too.
Yeah. Yeah, because you know, compromise working together, reaching across the aisle,
over here
is really best for America.
I've got the peace pipe over here. Let's pass it around with Obama and Pelosi.
The fact of the matter is in life there are winners and there are losers. Doesn't necessarily make it, you know, nice, but life isn't nice. You know, there's winners and there's losers. And, you know, right now, what we need to be having a great big whole bunch of losers of are these, vote for it without reading it Democrats. I mean, who would even buy a car? or go rent a stereo from a rent-a-center or something like that without reading the contract first. What kind of a moron is going to sign into law something that's 2,000 pages thick without even flipping through it to check the highlights? You know, 2,000 pages is a lot of reading. That's some heavy reading. But you should at least, let's go check out the first page of each chapter anyway. You know,
well, that's exactly why they hated Newt. I mean, that's why they hated Newt, is because Newt, although he wasn't completely radical saying, let's just completely clean house, he was a guy that was saying, we need conservatives to take the seats. Anywhere where he had a chance to get a conservative, he was going for the conservative. He was never, you know, the one to go just for the establishment, run-of-the-mill, what you're supposed to vote for. He was willing to take chances. He is a big ideas guy, and they hate that. The establishment and both parties hate that, and they're willing to work together to prevent somebody like Newt. And as much as I love Ron Paul, and I do like Ron Paul more than Gingrich, but when it comes down to the matter of facts, is that Newt Gingrich was able, more than anybody else in my life, my entire lifetime, in the House of Representatives, which is the most important body in the United States federal government. I think that the federal government has too much prominence no matter what, but when it comes to federal government, it should be the House of Representatives above everything else. And Newt was able to go in there and articulate a message that would bring out more conservatives into the House of Representatives, where the people's business is supposed to be done. And that's why they can't stand. They hated him for the fact that he was the Ted Cruz of the House of Representatives, the Rand Paul, the Mike Lee of the House of Representatives. And I don't want to say he capitulates to them, but as much as he'll play ball with the establishment is always going to hate Newt, and they're always going to you know, treat him like the redheaded stepchild, and it's for the worst, not the best.
Well, I mean, look what we ended up with. We ended up with John Boehner, who feels like
who would not trade John Boehner in for Newt Gingrich right now?
I mean, my gosh, you know, I mean, John Boehner, I mean, the fact that he thinks his job description is not to guide guide the ideals of his party, but instead to work with everybody in there. Well, what if half the people you're working with are idiots? You know, you're supposed to work with these people? No, you're not supposed to work with these people. You're supposed to stifle those idiots and work with the ones that have some sense. You know, you put out an agenda, and you know, that's in the best interest of the nation. You don't sit there and say, well, it's not really my job to come up with an agenda and guide the country. I mean, I'm not a leader or anything. I'm just a Speaker of the House, you know. I'm going to go back here and get drunk with Obama and talk about smoking cigarettes, you know. I mean, come on.
Here's the thing with Boehner. Here's the thing with Boehner, and people have to come to this realization. You know, look, I'm not a guy who doesn't cry ever. You know, there's things that will make me cry. John Boehner has, I mean, either a social or a mental disorder where he is just not a completely stable guy. Whenever he comes out for a press conference, no matter what it's about, he's about to cry. He does not have the guts to be the Speaker of the House. Newt Gingrich had guts and gave us results. And, any disagreement that I have with Newt is my Newt, you know, my Newt,
yes.
and differences. And we would be blessed to have Newt. If Newt Gingrich was the Speaker of the House, when this vote for cloture and this whole Obamacare fight came down, I believe we would have won the whole damn debate.
Absolutely.
Well, the fact is, you know, we've got to get away from, you know, this is like my analogy of the night, I suppose, is the unsweetened oatmeal politician. You know, we've got to have some guys that, you know, put, sprinkle some cinnamon in there, put some chocolate in there, do something to give it some flavor for
chocolate,
crying out
yeah,
loud. Oh, chocolate oatmeal's the bomb, but, you know, you know. But you know, we've got to get away from this blank slate, I have no opinion because it might affect me in the polls, type of politician
mm-hmm.
that we've got now. And
or it
and,
might be unfair to somebody.
Oh, how
somebody
sad.
Has to lose.
You know, well,
my
yeah,
gosh, he's the biggest loser. Romney, no wonder he said that. He probably, I already said that he knew he was going to lose the whole thing. He was setting himself up for his excuse. Oh, I didn't really want to win. That then somebody else would have had to lose. Oh,
you know, up until the point that he won the nomination, I mean, I was literally campaigning, you know, as far on the Republican side of anybody but Romney.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anybody that was running at that point would have been preferable to Mitt Romney because he's like unflavored, you know, unsweetened oatmeal. There was no flavor to him, no substance to him. And I only voted for him. I only voted for him because his opponent was Barack Hussein Obama. And it is the only reason that I voted for Mitt Romney, not because I wanted him as president. However, with that said, I have to give Obama one word of thanks. He has done more to galvanize the conservative movement than any single person has done in the history of this nation.
Amen.
And so thank you. You know, thank you, Barack Hussein Obama, because of you, Mr. Obama, we may make great strides toward wiping socialism out of this country once we're done with you. So
yeah,
thank you for being who you are.
Amen to that, and that's what I want to see. I mean, as the grassroots, it is our job to put pressure on Newt and Ron Paul and Ted Cruz and whoever else, and,
mm-hmm.
and get these guys to all come together and say, look, you know, down here at the grassroots, we're looking at you guys. We know who's on our side. You, and you are on our side. Those guys, this, that, and the other are not on our side, and we do need, like, some kind of rallying point. And, I mean, could
mm-hmm.
you imagine if there was a rally on D.C. headlined by Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich and Ted Cruz and some of the other great minds of conservatism, you know, Walter E. Williams? It would be earth-shattering what that would do to galvanize us for 2014 and beyond. And that's that, in my opinion, if we can put together something like that, if we can get our guys to come together, because there is differences and there was debates and there was fights between a lot of these different true conservatives. And,
mm-hmm.
the establishment knew who they wanted. I mean, from day one, I was looking at that race and going, man, it's going to be Romney. The establishment has their guy. We all knew it. You knew it in the back of your mind. You said there was no way Romney's going to get it. But at the same time, you were like, you know what? They're going to give it to Romney, aren't they?
They're pushing it. And they were telling me for a long time, and this even considers, you know, I was calling them faux news for a while for Fox News because, I mean, they were even touting that, you know, Romney was the only candidate that had a real chance of beating Obama when the reality of the situation was the exact opposite of that. He was the absolute worst candidate to go up against
yeah.
Obama. I mean, especially
the
one, you know.
You know, there are some of his policies that I found out that he was a big fan of the Fed, and I didn't know this while he was running. But you know, for hypothetical sake, I think it would have been quite entertaining from a political arena standpoint to have seen Herman Cain go up against Obama. Well, there goes the race card.
Yeah, they couldn't play that.
You know, and I mean, I really think, you know, because
well,
he
actually,
really is.
The Republicans played the race card because Herman Cain's all black and Obama's only half.
Well, there you go, you know. And you know, the thing is, I mean, Herman Cain was a very good speaker. He's a very good debater. And I think, you know, maybe not quite as, you know, quite as polishing as Newt would have been in a debate with Obama. I think that Herman Cain would have wiped the floor with Obama in a debate. It would have been like watching your grandfather lay waste to the petulant child.
Well, the problem is, though, when they can't play the race card anymore, they pull out the pubic hairs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they said there's some kind of scandal or something.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. You talked about that scandal with Clarence Thomas back years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
When
they said
there's a hair on the can of Coke or something like that.
Yeah. And... yeah, it's just sad.
Well, that's the thing, though. We can't be afraid of that because that's going to come no matter what. And even
right.
if we have a very safe candidate like Mitt Romney is, you know, oh, he's so it's so safe to go with Mitt Romney. It doesn't matter in the end. We like Ronald Reagan said, we have got to have bold colors. Bold colors. That's the Ron Paul. That's the Herman Cain. Even with bold colors, Newt Gingrich. These are bold colors. You know, when Rick Perry gets up there, and I don't completely hate Rick Perry, but when he gets up there and he doesn't even know what his talking points are, and he says, "Oops, I forgot what I wanted to eliminate." I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh,
know what you want to eliminate. You're never going to hear Ron Paul or Newt Gingrich get up there and say, "Oops." Never in a million years will Newt Gingrich get up there and say, "You know what? I can't remember what I was talking about," because Newt knows what he's talking about. Ron knows what he's talking about. You've got to paint those bold colors and not be pastel. Pastel loses it every time. And as much trouble or as much grief I'll give George W. Bush, the campaign that George W. Bush ran in 2000, I would vote for till the end of my life. Think about what he was running for. He was running for lower taxes. He was running for
right.
deregulation. He didn't want to be the policeman of the world. He's strong militarily. But let's not be the policemen of the world and try to figure out every little tribal dispute between these people that refuse to leave the Stone Age. And that's what Bush said. And then when he got in there, you know, some of the people he surrounded himself by totally ruined that. And he did not lead. It is part of 9/11, but Bush did not lead. He listened to the smartest people in the room. And when you listen to the smartest people in the room, that's a problem. Reagan didn't listen to the smartest people in the room. You know, people like Goldwater wouldn't do it. Neither did Calvin Coolidge or Eisenhower listen to the smartest people in the room. The smartest people in the room are usually the ones with the worst ideas. And and Romney would have listened to the smartest people in the room any day of the week. I believe Rick Perry would have done the same. Newt Gingrich is probably the smartest person in the room.
He is the smartest person.
He would have been the smartest person. You know, and that's the I think Saturday Night Live actually made a clip one time about Reagan, and they were actually trying to make fun of him. But in actuality, it just made him look good if my memory serves correctly, because this was a long time ago. And they had, you know, Reagan in the room, and he had all the advisors and this and there, and they're telling him something. He's like, "Okay, well, you know, think about it, guys, this and that, blah, blah, blah." You know, they're supposed to be, you know, the smartest men in the room. And so they leave, and so he's talking with just one other person on a squad along with somebody. So like, so what are you going to do, you know, Mr. President? Goes, "Well, I think I'm going to go with my idea." And they're like, "Oh, well, you know, your advisor said this." He goes, "Yeah, but I'm the president." You know, yeah. Or something like, yeah, that's what they said, but I'm the president, you know.
Yeah, that's it. You know, and
I want to do it.
You know, you can have all sorts of smart people surrounding you, but every once in a while you get the most profound wisdom from the biggest idiot. You know, because they're not looking at all of the subcontext going on around them and the agendas. They're just blissfully ignorant. And
I'm waiting for the profound wisdom of the idiot Obama to come out somewhere. When are we going to get that?
Yeah, probably from his prison cell. I wish I hadn't been a commie.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, you know, he did. Hey, look at the bright side. I mean, at least Obama has he's allowed gays into the military and women onto the front lines. I mean, what could possibly go wrong with that? You know, he's supporting the Fed and the International Monetary Fund and the bailouts and giving out more money than ever to all these countries, supporting the Muslim Brotherhood, Obamacare. As soon as we destroy this country completely and go into a world government, it's going to be a huge success. You know, he's all
and
around
a great
job. And
we're going to get an effeminate army.
Yes, a feminist. I mean, we like literally our flag will
I'm
now
feminist.
Be like a picture of Rachel Maddow on you know on the American flag. It's going to be fantastic.
Well, here's what we got to do, guys. Here's what we got to do. America has already shown that the Democrats can beat Karl Rove. Now, what we have to do is show them that the conservatives, the grassroots, can beat Karl Rove. He's the man we have to beat.
We just need to just, you know, force him into retirement by beating enough of his people where he realizes that we're not some buying his game anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you know, where he becomes a pox to anybody running. You know where they know.
Yeah, there
bro, you know you get away from me because every time you side with somebody, they lose.
That's why I disagree, though. I want to keep Karl Rove around. This is the thing. Let's not get rid of Karl Rove. Let's keep him around. He'll be a bellwether, so where we can tell, where we know exactly who not to support. This is the thing.
Yeah, there you go.
With the revolution and technology and the internet and radio shows like this, what we can do is we can single out, let Carl keep talking, because every time Carl supports somebody, we've got a record to go on. They bring in new Johnny Slick, okay, new Johnny Slick Rhino coordinator, and everybody's going to say, well, okay, this guy sounds good. What do we do now? And you don't have nothing to go against them on. Karl Rove's a blessing. Barack Obama's a blessing. All these guys that we know who they are a blessing, and I'm glad to have them around because they're so easy to identify. The big problem is we've got to galvanize our grassroots. We've got to pick ourselves up by our bootstraps, and I'm a complainer myself, and I'm not saying you guys are complaining or anything like that, but we've got to have a positive message because nobody wants to join a nihilistic team that says, ah, man, we blew it in 2012 with Ron Paul. We blew it in 2012 with Newt Gingrich. And I think we did blow it. I do think we did blow it. But we've got to put on our big boy pants and our happy face and go out and say, listen to this great message. You know, one of my friends, a black conservative here in Charlotte, Vince Coakley, and if anybody wants to Google him, it'd be a great guest for you to have on, Robert, actually. Vince Coakley is a amazing speaker, and he might be running for office soon. Unfortunately, not the seat I want him to run for, where he would have a better chance of winning, but he is trying to galvanize. Coakley, just message me on Facebook and I'll get it to you. I think it's COA, C-O-A-K-L-E-Y. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, you can send that to me on Facebook.
Yeah, and you know, that's his idea, is to galvanize the minority communities and stuff like this, because they're ready to come over to our side for someone like Newt or for someone like Ron, but they're never going to come over to our side for someone like Karl Rove or Mitt Romney. And this is, but the good part about it is, we can identify who these frauds are of the Republican Party. And if we stand up and if we stand on principle and we say, you know what, once the nomination process is over, you want to support the nominee, that's fine. But if we stand up in these primaries and we stand up early on and we say, this is what we believe, we are bold colors, we're not pastel, we are different, we're not the same as the Republican establishment, the Democrat establishment, or anything else, people run to that message. Look at what Reagan was able to do with that type of attitude. Look what Newt did with that kind of attitude. Look what Ron Paul's campaigns in 2008 and 2012 were supernatural. There was nobody else that was going to galvanize young people that were in college and stuff, like going to these Marxist, socialist colleges and universities across this country that galvanized the youth like Ron Paul. Nobody galvanized the baby boomers like Newt Gingrich. Nobody galvanized. Ronald Reagan galvanized a generation that was not even ready or even wanting Ronald Reagan. He galvanized a generation out of nothing with his message. If we can articulate this message and we can be that shining city on a hill, then we can win, man. We can save this country. And we'll look back on it, and we might not get any credit for it, and I don't even want any credit for it. I got 5 children. That's what I'm concerned about.
And this is, unfortunately, gosh, there's only a few minutes left here. Well, not a few, about 13. But I'm going to play a quick song. It's only about 2 minutes, 30 seconds. It's not the ending song, but it is one that I think is a good prelude for an announcement that I was going to make to the Newt fans here of the show, who listened on the archives as well. So I know, Cindy, this song would be familiar to you, maybe to some of you others from during the campaign, but here it is.
If you want groceries in your basket, be with me. If you want food upon your table, be with Newt. If you want jobs, 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 and prosperity, be with Newt, be with Newt, be with Newt. If you are proud of America, be with Newt. If you think we're exceptional, be with Newt. We are a shining city on a hill. Be with Newt, be with Newt, be with Newt. If you want to win the future, be with Newt. If you want to save America, be with Newt. A president with real solutions. Be with Newt, be with Newt, be with Newt. A 21st century contract now with Newt. A contract with America, be with Newt. The man.
You know, Robert, one of these days you're going to have to play Jeremy Dodge's song, I Am American.
I may have that. I'll have to check through my audio clips and see if I have that. I think I have, like, I'm a Soldier or something of that nature.
I'm telling you, you play that song and you'll want to throw the door open and scream, I Am American. I'm telling you.
I'll have to check to see if I got that. Got one. That sounds familiar. But the reason why I played that audio clip, and for the announcement, I told the folks that I was going to bring up for our Newt Gingrich fans here from the show, is starting on this Friday at 10 p.m., December the 6th, I will be opening up a Friday night show. I don't know if it'll run the length of time that I do on Wednesday nights. We'll see how that goes. But the theme of the show is going to be Newt News Fridays, in which that is what the show's focus will be, is everything Newt Gingrich. And we'll be looking at Newt Gingrich Productions. We'll also be looking to raise money to help defray the cost of when Newt Gingrich was running for office, because one of the things that I do know is that Newt Gingrich would not run again for 2016 if the debts that were incurred during the 2012 election would not be paid. So we're going to be having some of that as well for people to donate there. I will be putting a link to where you could donate to defray those costs up on the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, so people can go there as well. And it's basically, so anyone out there is a Newt Gingrich fan, would like to see him either, I know there's a push for him to run for Senate in Virginia, or of course, once again, and this is my preference, see him run in 2016. Get the train rolling now, because once you get a train started early, it's really hard to stop. So get it started here in 2013, 2014 ahead of schedule. I think that's one of the things that actually helped Romney. I mean, he was running for years before even the 2012 elections came around. So that's going to be happening this Friday on December 6th, starting at the show's regular time at 10 p.m., so tell the folks who you know who are Newt Gingrich fans, they're welcome. Of course, we'll have them come on and call into the show as well, tell us what their thoughts and experiences are with Newt Gingrich, and also if they were played a part in the Newt Gingrich campaign. Of course, they're welcome to call in as well. I've got some experience because I, too, worked on the grassroots campaign for Newt Gingrich 2012. So that being said, I see, unfortunately, we've got, 4 minutes left, and I do like to do my closing, which takes about a couple minutes. So let's go ahead and give each one of you folks just a minute to say any closing thoughts about what is still important to conservatives today. And, of course, as usual, I'll start with the ladies. And so I'll go with you, Cindy, and then Chuck, and then James, you close it out there, and then I will close out the show. Go ahead, Cindy.
Well, I think I said pretty much everything I needed to say. There's so much more you can say, but, it has to come little by little. But we really do have to come up with a strategy to get these Tea Party guys. I don't care which one of them it is. I mean, I do care. I'd like to have Newt. That's my first choice. But first, there's a lot of them out there that I'm happy with for a second choice. And so we need to get them on the ballot, though. And that means we're going to have to come up against Karl Rove and Bill O'Reilly and others of that ilk. And I don't know what it can be, whether we have to, I think we should all make our way to the January midwinter meeting and just be a huge delegation of conservatives there protesting and letting them know that we are totally unhappy with them and that we are going to use our numbers to gain our power back. By the way, Chuck, what's the date and where is the midwinter meeting? January what?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure. I know it's going to be towards the end of January, and last I heard it was going to probably be in Chicago.
That's not too far from it. It's only about five hours.
Yeah, I hate Chicago. Well,
yeah, I'm not too fond of it either.
Have you noticed how they've made all these last few midwinter these meetings, these Republican RNC meetings have all been at terribly liberal cities around the country? I mean, L.A., what is the Republican Party doing in L.A.? Give me a break. What are we doing in Chicago?
But we only have limited time, so we will definitely cover that, and I definitely want to have further conversations with you, Chuck, on covering the mid elections. I'm going to try to get Morton Blackwell back here on the show as well, and Mark Willis, who I know isn't doing it any longer, but at least to get his viewpoints, perspectives. So go ahead, Chuck. I'm sorry about that, Sonny. I don't mean to cut you off, but we only have a few minutes left. So go ahead, Chuck.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'd just like to say thank you for having me on the show. It's always a honor to be on with you guys, and if anybody wants to contact me, you can go to constitutionalwar.org and contact me through there, constitutionalwar@gmail.com, and on Facebook, Constitutional War on Facebook, constitutionalwar.org on Facebook, and love the support, always trying to raise funds to keep doing what we're doing. And if there was anything that I could leave you guys with, it would be to, just get involved. And, we can complain about Karl Rove, and I'm very good at doing that myself. But we've got to find the right men and women to go up against the chosen selected candidate.
Certainly.
There's those folks out there like Sharon Angle who would have been better than Harry Reid, obviously. And Karl Rove and the establishment wouldn't support her, but she couldn't articulate a message. Well, then there's those guys out there like Ken Cuccinelli that can articulate the message, and we've really got to get behind these folks. You've got to get behind your city council folks, your sheriffs, your everything. I mean, it's a never-ending quest for freedom, as Patrick Henry and those have articulated in different words, but get out there. One of the guys that I'm supporting is the guy running for Senate in my state here, Dr. Greg Brannon. That's B-R-A-N-N-O-N. Matt Bevin is going up against Mitch McConnell. Just
and
find somebody.
Go ahead real quick because we've only got like a minute and a half.
Yeah, no problem. Like I said, just find somebody to support out there. Find a group, find a candidate, find an organization to support. And thank you for the time on your show, man.
Oh, you're welcome, Chuck. It's great to hear from you again. Go ahead, James, if you can make it brief, and I'll close things out before the time shuts us off.
Well, I'd just like to say that we as conservatives have got to not draw a line in the sand. We've got to chisel a line in the concrete and not take a step back. We have got to make a decision, and we have got to stand with it. We've got to stand strong, and we've got to stand together. We've got to look at the big picture and put aside the little petty differences that cause all of the infighting among the